the American Journal. We've got a three-hour jam-packed program for everyone today. A lot going on. It was a busy weekend for me. I hope it was a great weekend for you all at home. And I hope you weren't paying attention to the news cycle. I hope you were enjoying time with your loved ones, of course. So we're going to catch you up on everything that's going on all around the world. Thanks for jumping on with us today. Obviously, if you saw, not so much peace in the Middle East this weekend. Both Israel and Hamas were back to attacking one another. Hamas was allegedly ones who ignited the fire, and Israel responded. We'll bring you the very latest on that front. Plus, Secret Service is coming clean and saying that they actually found a hunting stand near President Trump's, where his plane would be coming in and out of, over at West Palm Beach Airport. So ultimately right now, we're just hearing from the Deputy Director, Dan Bongino, in regards to what the investigation looks like. But that hunting stand has officially been sent over, it looks like, to an FBI lab. They're looking to see who possibly set this up, and obviously if it was going to be used against President Donald Trump, because it was very strategically placed. Of course, somebody with background information, knowing where President Trump's plane was going to land, would have likely been the ones who set this up. So we'll give you the latest on that. Plus, you may have seen it. George Santos was commuted, and now he's a free man, just leaving prison. A lot going on there. A lot of people on the left not very happy with this. But, of course, George Santos, yes, he admitted that he was wrong. But 7 years in prison? Come on. He's speaking out now. We're going to play a couple of clips from him because he's been making the rounds, the corporate media tour, speaking out and thanking President Donald Trump. Now, there's also an incredible video that we're going to show you that you probably haven't seen anywhere else. It's from the Department of Transportation. And it highlights, again, another foreign truck driver driving the wrong way on a highway. Now, thankfully, a great American pulled that truck driver over, told him he's going the wrong way, told him to stop, and made him turn around. But now the Department of Transportation is investigating, and you're never going to guess where his country of origin is from, of course. They're looking into this, and we're going to give you the latest on that investigation. Plus, also, guys, we have a lineup of incredible guests, Ken Silva joining us, because there's a lot going on regarding Jeffrey Epstein. There's a lot of very interesting connections, the people who were close to Epstein and now officially winding up in very key positions. So a lot going on there that Ken Silva is going to weigh us in on. Mark Lucas also joining the program today as well, because obviously as a veteran, he's got a lot to say about Zohran Mamdani going out there and meeting with the co-conspirators of the 9/11 terror attack. Now, again, folks, this isn't surprising. We've told you before, he is a jihadist and a commie. So, yes, this is pretty much par of the course. Sorry, guys. It's early in the morning today. Forgive me, please. Aaron Wright's also going to be joining us in studio today. A lot to sound off with him because obviously, folks, he's working with the DOJ. He's now a candidate for Texas AG, an attorney. And there's a lot going on with President Trump sounding off about Barack Obama weaponizing the federal government to go after him. And there's also a referral for Mr. Jack Smith that I'm looking for Aaron Wright's to weigh in on, as well as a lot of controversy regarding President Trump going after those cartel boats. Now, they're allegedly drug boats, but Senator Rand Paul is sounding off on the issue, and Aaron Wright's going to join us to weigh in on that. Plus, Dr. James Thorpe is going to be joining the program today. He is a board-certified OBGYN, and I want to hear from him because a lot of these popular birth controls, there's a lot of medical issues about those birth controls that they're giving kids. I mean, teenage girls are getting these pills and injections. And sadly, they're not knowing and completely understanding what the risks are. Ultimately, we're learning more about a Pfizer birth control, which now, unfortunately, looks like, according to several studies, is leading to brain tumors. So we'll be discussing that with the doctor as well. Plus, Gavin Dahlgreen is an independent journalist who's based in Portland. He's been covering the homeless crisis in Portland. And, you know, it's been quite fascinating to sit back and watch because his coverage has been exposing what's going on truly in Portland. But also he uncovered, sadly, a man who had died from a fentanyl overdose this weekend in Portland. And no one went to go aid him. So he'll be joining the program today to detail that report. So much happening today on the American Journal. We got tons of stories no one's going to tell you about. So do not go anywhere. There's more to unpack over the next 3 hours.
Hey, the Alex Jones app, AJN Live, is now the number one app in the world. That's right. You heard me. We're number one. And this is pissing off the Democrats in the deep state big time. They're doing everything they can to shut us down, and now here we are dominating the Apple Store.
Smells like victory.
We just launched the app less than 2 days ago, and we're already the number one news app in the world. And we'd like to keep it that way, so if you haven't done so yet, now's your chance. Go to alexjonesapp.com and download the app and tell the globalists to go f*** themselves.
Tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello.
Good morning and welcome to the American Journal. We're excited that you're all jumping on board with us today. Happy Monday, everyone. Oh man, it was a crazy weekend for me. I hope you all had some time to sit back with your loved ones and relax a little bit. Don't pay attention to the news cycle. Focus on being with friends and family because that's the important part to all of this. It's my job catch you up on everything else that you may have missed out on. So that's what we're looking forward to doing today. We have a jam-packed program. Five guests coming to the show today joining us, of course. Aaron Wright's going to be joining us in studio, as many of you know. He's running for Texas AG. He is also an incredible attorney, and he formerly worked under the DOJ under Pam Bondi. So there's a lot that I want to catch up with him on. So we're excited to have him on the program in studio later today. I'll also be joined by an independent journalist based out in Portland, and you may have seen the video. He actually stumbled upon, while covering his normal beat, stumbled upon a homeless man who appeared to be homeless, who sadly passed away of a fatal overdose on fentanyl. Now, he was there. He filmed it all. His name is Kevin Dahlgreen, and he's going to be joining the program today to talk about the crisis going on right now in Portland. Not many people will tell you and give you this raw footage, but we will, of course, and we'll be having him explain exactly what's happening in Portland. But most importantly, what's happening to the homeless population, specifically how women are becoming victimized in all of this. So he'll be joining us for that. Plus, I'll also be joined by Ken Silva because he's been following a ton of great stories regarding Jeffrey Epstein over the weekend that we're dropping. And you might have missed out on them. Now, they're big, big stories. Plus, he has a very strange update regarding that bomb that they said was tucked under the Fox News van in Utah. Remember right after Charlie Kirk was assassinated, there was allegedly a device that was planted under a Fox van. Well, interesting enough, two of the individuals that were initially charged in all of this actually haven't had their charges formally given over to their attorney. And so it looks like a judge has actually dismissed it. Now, Kevin Silva's been following all of that. It's a strange story that just recently happened. So he's breaking down the latest for us. And we're also joined by Mark Lucas later in the program as well, because Mark's a veteran. He runs the Veterans Action, and he's going to be sounding off about Zohran Mamdani, because Zohran Mamdani is out here, number one, telling Governor Andrew Cuomo, former Governor Andrew Cuomo, that they need to be showing up to these mosques as if the rest of us around the country need to be bowing down to their Allah. No. That's not how this works. But specifically what Mark's going to talk about, I'm going to mention that to him as well, but specifically what we're going to be talking about with him is how Zohran Mamdani is hanging out with these 9/11 bombers. And it's not looking good. It's not looking good. This guy is closely associated with jihadists, and he doesn't even hide it. In fact, he celebrates those who are very excited to talk about 9/11. What is going on in New York City right now, and how have we hit this low? Look forward to having Mark on the program today to discuss all of that, of course. Also, Dr. James Thorpe is going to be joining the program today because he's a board-certified OBGYN, but there's a very important topic that we need to be discussing. It has a lot to do with, obviously, Bill Gates and, you know, his big push to sterilize young people. But what's the deal with going on with birth control? Because not many people want to call it out. Birth control has a ton of side effects that doctors won't warn you about. And we're learning about a new one from one of the Pfizer injectable birth controls, and it's absolutely devastating. But over 1,200 lawsuits have been filed, and it's in regards to women who are claiming that they develop brain cancer. Yeah. After taking those jabs. So he's going to be joining us to break down what this actually means for women all across the country, because that's a big one. That is a massive, massive story that's not getting enough attention. So let's kick it off at the top of the show today, because we've been talking about this, and I warned you, right? We were celebrating the peace deal between Israel and Hamas, and I told you, folks, I don't think 100% that this is going to be everlasting peace, but let's celebrate the hostages at least coming home. That was a big one for us. Well, over the weekend, it looks like both sides are trading blows again. Now, Israel was claiming Hamas launched the attack at first, and now we're hearing reports that it wasn't exactly Hamas leadership, that this might have been kind of a rogue group of individuals doing just that. Two IDF soldiers were killed, according to reports, and obviously Israel launching a bunch of attacks in response to all of this. Now, in clip one, you're going to hear how Fox News reporter Trey Yanks, who's on the streets right now and who's been paying attention to this, obviously, very, very closely. He knows everything regarding the Middle East. We're going to listen to his report because it's very specific. Take a listen.
It's not good news. The Israeli military is currently striking the Gaza Strip. They say Hamas violated the ceasefire agreement. I spoke with one military official who said two separate attacks took place inside Israeli-controlled territory, one of them an RPG attack and the other a sniper attack conducted by Hamas. Most of the strikes this morning have taken place in the southern Gazan city of Rafah, but there is at least one report of a strike in the northern part of the enclave. This was a difficult moment for Israeli forces having to make a decision about whether or not to start striking Gaza again.
Very difficult decision. They did respond, obviously, and President Trump not very excited about this because we're supposed to be in the phase two part of all of this, and it looks like we're taking a couple of steps back here. But Hamas still has not completed phase one. They still have not returned all of the corpses of those hostages that were killed, which obviously has Israel on edge. Are these people actually dead? Well, they're looking for evidence of just that. And the reality of it is Hamas is a bunch of barbarians, and we're not going to get anywhere with them. And they're going to do their very best to pretend like they want peace, but sadly, they are slaughtering their own people. Palestinians are being dragged to the streets and executed publicly. And we knew this was going to happen. We knew exactly what they were going to do. They are Islamic terrorists. Sadly, all those pro-Palestinian protesters, though, aren't actually defending Palestinians who are being executed by Hamas. They only offer their criticisms when it's Israel, sadly. Doesn't matter what side of this you fall on, nobody should be killed for that reason alone, without any evidence, without trial. Just the assumption that you may have helped out Israel during the war, so you get dragged out of your home and executed in the middle of the street. That is not what's supposed to be happening, but that's exactly what's happening right now. And sadly, everyone's quite quiet about the issue. President Trump isn't, though. Clip two, we're going to play for you. President Trump is sounding off and saying that he's going to act potentially if Hamas doesn't end the violence. Take a listen.
Do you believe they really will disarm?
Well, they promised they would. They said they would. It's down that they would. Now, they said they were gang members, et cetera, you know. But these are very violent people. This is a very violent part of the world. Nobody's seen violence like this. If we have to, we'll disarm
the U.S.
Well, whether it's me or the U.S. or it's, you know, a proxy, could be Israel with our backing. We won't have boots on the ground. There's no reason to.
Now, obviously, we don't want Americans to have any involvement in this. President Trump is very much stuck on getting rid of Hamas, it sounds like, and he's going to do whatever he can to do. I would like to see the Arab nations getting involved in this instead of the rest of us having to fix their issue. It's always so interesting how they don't ever want to directly intervene on any of their Islamic terrorists. They just sit on the sidelines and get credit for peace deals that, well, should have been their peace deals. So the reality of it now is President Trump is taking on this issue, and I don't think it's our problem. This is what's constantly going on in this country. We consistently make these issues our issues when we shouldn't be in the first place. We shouldn't be. Israel has its hostages back. That was a major, major victory. The president should be celebrating that. He played a major role in doing that. But sadly, over 1,200, 1,500, I believe, Islamic terrorists were given back to Hamas. And it's even crazier because, folks, we've reported it and we're going to do a little bit more deep digging into it later on in the program. But one of those alleged Hamas terrorists who was there for October 7th and apparently did enter Israel was just recently recovered in Louisiana. So the reality of it is America is not too far away from getting her own October 7th because of the Biden regime. They allegedly allowed this individual into our country and handed him a visa. That's what was going on under the Biden regime. Islamic terrorists entered our country, and the Trump administration is going there, and they're trying their very best to purge them from our society. But the reality of it is we're all just sitting ducks. to prepare to defend yourselves. Let's turn to another subject as well. President Trump over the weekend commuting the sentence of George Santos. Now, as many of you guys know, George Santos was sentenced to 7 months in prison. Many people did not like him because, well, they said he lied about a lot, committed fraud. But of course, George Santos probably wasn't worth the 7 year sentence. I'd say it wasn't worth the 7 year sentence. President Trump saving him from prison, which we all figured was going to happen. Couldn't imagine a situation where President Trump was going to allow that man to sit in a prison cell. Now, he was in solitary confinement for 41 days, which is, yes, abuse and quite strange given the fact that the DOJ runs the Bureau of Prisons. Just worth it. Just throw that out there. So although he has had his sentence commuted, I know he's excited about that. We're going to play clip three for you because he was on Fox this weekend talking about how excited he was. The reality of it is when you're talking about solitary confinement, remember who runs the Bureau of Prisons? It's the DOJ. Take a listen.
You know, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me. And thank you to President Trump for clemency and for having such an amazing will for second chances. You know, I feel like it's justice served in a sense of I've made some poor choices in my life, but nothing would warrant a insane, arbitrary sentence. But on top of that, a sentence that no one else would have gotten, a treatment that no one else would have gotten. 41 days in isolation in the shoe. And to add insult to injury, I had two co-defendants, one who got probation, one who was me, who got 7 years, and the other one who's still in the same facility today, suffering the same thing. Sam Mealy is still sitting in there, which I still think it's a great injustice. All first nonviolent first-time offenders with no criminal background, and we're being thrown in this harsh environment with absolutely nothing. So when I spoke to President Trump yesterday, I told him my commitment would be to prison reform. I told him my commitment would be to fighting to help Sam Mealy and so many other people who are being absolutely drowned with this arbitrary sentencing, a style of judges who are trying to circumvent the First Step Act.
So you were convicted of identity theft and wire fraud, basically
yes,
misusing the funds that donors
campaign
have given
funds.
To you for personal reasons. Why shouldn't you have served out your full term?
Look, Charlie, I understand people want to make this into a he's getting away with it.
He's not technically getting away with it, folks. He's paid for his crimes at this point. I mean, there are so many politicians who have done significantly worse. They never get held accountable because they're part of the machine. George Santos was an easy target, and sadly, the GOP helped throw him under the bus by pushing him out of Congress before he was even convicted or pled guilty, So the reality of it is sometimes you plead guilty to crimes that you may or may have not committed just to get a cheaper legal bill. So, yeah, I would say George Santos deserves to be a free man today. I feel like we sit back, we talk about all these corrupt politicians who have gotten away with it for so long, and nothing really happens after they get caught. They're part of the machine. They're part of the deep state. Why do you think all these politicians can't retire? It's because they have to continue to work or else they're next. So George Santos being free, I'm okay with it. We've got bigger fights to pick. Plus, I also want to hear his take on the young Republicans beef that's going on right now. The big tech scandal that Politico broke last week. He was friends with a lot of people involved in that case. And so that would be very interesting to hear him weigh in on that, I must say. But George Santos did not deserve 7 years in prison. He did not deserve the sentence he was given. He was given that sentence because they didn't like him. That is exactly why he was given that sentence. Folks, we need a system that actually allows people to fix their issues, reform themselves, rather than one that just keeps you under. And I'm specifically talking about nonviolent offenses, but real nonviolent offenses, not what Democrats would say are nonviolent offenses. Because as a New Yorker, I could tell you that Democrats in New York consider possession of child pornography to be a nonviolent offense. And I would say that's pretty violent. It's pretty violent. Let's turn to the other story we told you about in the beginning of the show. The Secret Service discovered a hunting stand with direct sight of President Donald Trump's Air Force One exit in Florida. The Secret Service found the suspicious hunting stand near Palm Beach International Airport, offering a direct sight of line to President Trump when he was going to be exiting Air Force One. Now, the FBI is leading the probe into all of this. They have since provided us with an update just moments ago. Mr. Dan Bongino, the deputy director of the FBI in Clip 19, details the latest on their investigation. Take a listen.
But here's what happens with this. Let me walk the American public through how this works. The FBI is not responsible, obviously, for the security plan of the president. That's the purview of the Secret Service. However, if the Secret Service finds something that they believe could be criminal, could be, I want to emphasize it could be, we take over. We have what's called an MOU, a memorandum of understanding with the Secret Service, where we will investigate after that. I was on the phone yesterday, back and forth with the D2, the deputy director over at the Secret Service, Matt Quinn, great guy. They were very concerned. Their security sweep discovered this hunting stand. The director was, Kash Patel, was directly involved right away. I'm on the email chain with him. He ordered an immediate response. I believe we had our plane flown down there. This hunting stand was appropriately dismantled, being flown to our lab. I believe it's there right now. And all of the forensic tools we have, from digital tools to biometric tools, they are all going to be applied to try to find out who put this up there, and why.
Mr. Deputy Director, big picture here. The snipers have become a problem. The first assassination attempt against the president, the assassination of Charlie Kirk, the attempted assassination of our ICE officers. That's the new tool now. They're attacking from the top.
Well, I wouldn't say it's a new tool. It's an old tool that may be used more often by folks who realize that there's some tactical advantage to distance and cover. The Secret Service has had to make a lot of modifications, Lawrence, given that this tool was obviously used or attempted to be used multiple times. They've expanded their security perimeter, how they do. I'm very close friends with the director over there and the deputy director, and some of those modifications have been made. And I think you saw the modifications with the discovery of this hunting stand set up in the tree outside of West Palm Beach. But yeah, there's no room. This is a zero fail mission, Lawrence. No time for a BS here. It's zero fail. You can't have a mistake here. I haven't been a Secret Service agent and now an FBI agent and with the NYPD. I can tell you, this is one of those missions where there's no do-overs.
We're going to continue to follow the story as it develops, obviously, folks, because this is a big one. Was there a third assassination attempt to kill President Donald J. Trump? I'm sure there's more that they won't tell us about, but this one is serious. From my understanding, too, that there was a very limited amount of people that knew that President Trump's plane was going to be arriving that specific part of the airport due to construction at the other part of the airport. So again, who set this up and what do they know? Because obviously this is very, very important that we get this information, because time and time again, we're learning more and more about assassination attempts on the president of the United States. And it looks like these sniper attacks are essentially the trend these days, where these communist murderous pigs are trying their very best to not only go after President Trump, but his close allies as well. Now let's turn to something President Trump is working on over the weekend, and that's going after the illegal drug lords. Now, folks, we are in a drug war right now, and we hate to say it like that, but the reality of it is these third world countries have profited massively off of war, off of drugs specifically, and they are now looking to do their very best to go after the American people and to kill us through fentanyl and other ways, obviously. But the reality of it is President Trump has had enough, and he went to Truth Social yesterday to call it the president of Colombia, who is obviously someone who's well known to have ties to the cartels in the region. Now, obviously, Colombia has profited widely off of drugs. And so President Trump has had enough. He, in fact, is calling out Petro for allowing these illegal drug dealers to operate in his country, produce massive amounts of products, and not really give a damn that the United States has been giving them payments and subsidies to carry them over to prevent these things from happening. Again, President Trump saying, we're done. We're done subsidizing your government. If you refuse to protect the American people, put an end to the sales of drugs. Now, obviously, if you are the president of Colombia, you probably are someone who had to get the blessing of the drug cartels. And so you can't really go out there and stop them from doing what they're doing. That's just the harsh reality of it. If you try to, you will likely end up with a couple of bullets in the back of your head. And he probably knows that very, very well and is playing it safe. But President Trump isn't doing that. He, in fact, is going to hold this guy's feet to the fire, saying that you're not going to be providing them with subsidies anymore. Any payments of any form will no longer be provided to Colombia because he says that they're ripping us off, which is true. I mean, essentially they are. They're still profiting off of drugs while pretending like the subsidies are being used to stop drugs from making their way into the United States. So, no more subsidies for Colombia. He warned that if Petro does not shut down the drug fields, that the United States would do so forcefully. Again, we don't know what that means. We could just kind of get a little insight into it, because over the weekend, the president going after alleged drug dealers making their way from Venezuela to the United States. We've seen it time and time again. He's shot and he's killed. Now, I believe it's been 24 of these drug traffickers. And the footage you just saw there was from over the weekend. President Trump saying that he did, in fact, order the Department of War to open fire and to go after those who are trying to bring drugs to the United States in international waters. You saw that submarine get attacked. Now, the two men who are on that submarine have apparently survived that. And they were returned to their nations of origin, and they are allegedly going to face prosecution. Now, according to the president, that submarine largely only carried fentanyl. But a lot of people, we're going to play it later in the show, because a lot of people are really upset about this, specifically because, obviously, we don't know if these people really do have drugs. We don't know who these people really are. Senator Rand Paul standing off about that. President Trump doesn't like the fact that he's speaking out about it, and in fact is being very critical about Senator Rand Paul on social media as well. So, you know, not surprising that that's what's currently going on right now. But again, at least President Trump is trying his best. But of course, you have to be certain that these people do have drugs on board. And President Trump so far says he is certain. I want to turn to a story about a D.C. woman. And this one's pretty funny, because this woman sued to stop one of her neighbors from smoking weed in Washington, D.C., because she was so fed up with her own home smelling like feces, like skunk. So she sued, didn't have an attorney, and won. After 5 years of representing herself, she was able to win the lawsuit in the D.C. Court of Appeals. A lower court judge had originally ruled in favor of her back in 2023. So she's now won her way through the appeals court without an attorney, representing herself for 5 years. I mean, that is persistence. She tells the New York Post, I am not Snoop Dogg. She insists that also in court. Now, she says that her neighbor said he only smoked once a day and never longer than 5 minutes to cope with a health medical skin cancer condition. So he was using marijuana to do just that. But the panel said it found it doubtful that he only smoked for a couple of minutes a day. And in fact, they have ruled in favor of her. Now, again, she wasn't even asking for any type of financial gain in any of this. She just wanted him to stop. That is pretty impressive, I must say. Folks, I want to tell you all to head on over right now to the alexjonesstore.com, because we have incredible sales going on right now. It's BOGO on sea moss gummies. Now, these are incredible. I love the sea moss gummies. It helps with you, especially if you have any bloating issues. It helps de-bloat and also gives you a lot of energy. I noticed that is a big difference for me. There's also incredible items on sale right now as well. So head on over to the alexjonesstore.com. Every time you make a purchase over at the alexjonesstore.com, you are helping fund our next operation. So we greatly appreciate it when you do just that over at the alexjonesstore.com. Plus, if you haven't done so already, I don't know what you're waiting on, but you got to head on over to the to our new app, download it, the App Store. I know a lot of you have iPhones. Now's a perfect time to dive in, get that going on your phone, because we don't know when that door's going to shut. That is how you stay in touch with us. So head on over and make sure you download the brand new Alex Jones app. Go to alexjonesapp.com for that. All right, we got a lot more to unpack, so do not go anywhere. There's more American Journal coming up in just a few moments.
I am so excited to talk to you. I want to plug the Irish sea moss was a big game changer for me. I was having a lot of like thermoregulation issues, like morning severe chills and cold in the morning. Hmm. All that stopped with the sea moss because it's a thyroid issue, and the sea moss has that iodine to heal your thyroid.
Isn't that amazing?
The methylene blue. Yeah, the methylene blue, life changing. I love it. I don't need caffeine anymore. Like, it's amazing, but I'm trying to be quick.
It's all right. Hey, when you're plugging, we got all the time in the world.
I love his supplement formula. I am an acupuncturist. I have a master's degree in Chinese medicine, and he's got some really good formulas put together, and they work really well. I really appreciate it. I stopped taking all of my other stuff that I was taking, and I just take a lot of you guys' stuff. I mean, because I love you and I want to support everything you guys are doing, but the formulas are good. I love the greens powder. I've tried every different type of greens powder out there, and Nothing has had as much stuff, amazing stuff packed into it, that has like a decent flavor to it. So the Optimal Human is like a daily staple.
It's
for
good,
me.
Right?
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah. And, okay. And I'm not saying that because just for you guys, but seriously, I've tried so many greens powders over the years, and it really is the best.
And are we paying you, Katie? Did we pay you to call in?
I would love to work for you. I swear, Alex Jones' picture is on, like, my mantle with all of my family pictures.
That's
like,
amazing.
Alex.
Some people call in, this person, you're paying them. But, like, no, our products really are good. People really like them. It's true.
Well, I accredited him to, like, the life-changing experience I had when I decided to leave California because I didn't want to bash Trump. And I listened to Jones until I found him. And I'm like, I got to get the hell out of here.
Right.
And so I moved back home to Ohio. And 3 months later, I met my husband. I feel like that life-changing event for me was because of listening to all the information that he gives. He's not like predicting the future. He's just giving you the information that's hard to find, where they're telling you what they're going to do.
Yeah. Well, now you have a 3-year-old kid, so your life's going great.
Yes.
I've said it before, but with a lot of these products, like, you really don't know what it's going to do for you, because you might not know that you're lacking a vitamin or lacking a mineral. And it, like, happens all the time with iodine. Iodine is one of those things where, like, as soon as you start taking it, you're like, oh, I'm not supposed to, and I'm not a doctor, it's not a medical claim, but people experience this. I've heard it from my friends where they're like, I'm not supposed to be tired all the time. I apparently just was lacking iodine. And it's like, you don't know if you're going to feel more energetic, if you're going to sleep better, if you're not going to have chills anymore. It's like people sort of go around thinking that that's the way their body is, but it's like, no, you're missing a key component. You're missing a vitamin, you're missing a mineral, and you don't even realize until you start taking something from the Alex Jones store. So I completely understand that you start taking the Irish sea moss and suddenly something that you thought was just the way your body is. No, turns out you can fix it. You can fix these things. Again, I'm not making medical claims, but you can only find out for yourself what effects these things will have. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Thanks for the plug, Katie.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
Tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back to the American Journal. We're all excited that you are all here joining us today on this beautiful, glorious Monday morning. So welcome to the show. We have a jam-packed program, great lineup of guests coming your way. We're covering everything the mainstream media is never going to tell you about on this show. So we're excited to have Ken Silva on the program today. He's one of the incredible editors over at HeadlineUSA.com. And Ken is doing great work at continuing to hold those people, especially those involved in the Epstein scandal, feet to the fire. And he's got a bombshell update for us in regards to people with close ties to Epstein and where they landed, as well as the Virginia Roberts book that's coming out this week. I want to welcome Ken to the show. So, Ken, you got a lot to update us on, so I'm going to let you take it away from here. Bring us the very latest. I see that you have a bunch of updates right now up on HeadlineUSA.com.
Yeah, absolutely, and thanks for having me. There was quite the whirlwind of information that was all kind of dumped on Friday and Saturday. Most significantly in my mind was that the House Oversight Committee released an interview transcript with Alexander Acosta, who headed the Southern District of New York while that office was investigating Epstein in the mid-2000s for crimes against children. That investigation resulted in Epstein receiving his infamous plea deal, in which he only served 13 months in jail. Most of that, he was out on work release. working for a weird front company called the Florida Science Foundation. Acosta also is infamously the guy who reportedly said that he gave Epstein such a light punishment because, quote, Epstein belonged to intelligence. Acosta has been denying those reports for years, ever since it was first reported by the Daily Beast. And this interview transcript doesn't reveal much new as far as that goes. You know, he was asked about it last month, and again, he denied it. However, the transcript does reveal astounding new information about somebody who worked for Acosta at the time, a guy named Bruce Reinhart, who, if that name should sound familiar, because he was actually ended up being the judge who in 2022 signed off on the infamous FBI raid on Trump's Mar-a-Lago property. So the news here, though, is that Acosta, the House Oversight Committee, presented Acosta with evidence that while Reinhart was still working in his office, while the investigation into Epstein was still ongoing, he incorporated a private practice at an address in Palm Beach on October 23rd, 2007. And the very next week, Epstein incorporated his Florida Science Foundation at that exact same address. So essentially, they were sharing office space together. And then Reinhart, of course, we've known this for years, that he quit the DOJ a couple months later, and he joined Epstein's legal team. And then if you fast forward another 6 months in 2008, Epstein, the plea deal is finalized, and then he goes and works at that Florida Science Foundation on work release while he's serving his sentence, essentially, again, sharing office space with this former DOJ guy. And the last thing I'll say about the Florida Science Foundation is it was revealed to be just a shell company. It's not like Epstein was sitting doing experiments with beakers and test tubes. In fact, we have reports that he was actually soliciting more women while he was out on work release, again, in the same office as the former DOJ prosecutor that who would go on to be the Mar-a-Lago judge. So, you know, the corruption here is just absolutely astounding. It's even deeper than we previously knew. Unfortunately, you know, somebody, you could think that this might lead to impeachment efforts against Judge Reinhart, which would be totally reasonable and justified, but I don't expect that to happen because, of course, we know, unfortunately, the Trump administration doesn't want to put this Epstein stuff back in the spotlight. They're hoping that this goes away.
Yeah, no, and it's becoming very clear how deep this all goes, and we're learning more and more about it and how well connected Epstein was to very high people and the roles that they all played. And there's interesting allegations currently being made in regards to Virginia Giuffre's new book that's coming out, the memoir, Nobody's Girl. And it details and it alleges a well-known prime minister participating in rape against her, brutal rape and other assaults as well. And, you know, we've heard before in the past that there was a former Israeli prime minister who she was accusing of rape in court. Now, he's always denied these claims. But what's the latest that we're learning in regards to this book that she was planning on releasing on Tuesday?
Yeah, so we're going to have to see exactly what's in the book, but it hits shelves tomorrow, and it's some really juicy stuff by all accounts, including, yes, this former Israeli PM who is also a good friend with Epstein. They sold spyware in America together to local police stations, and a lot of these police departments still use this Israeli spyware that was peddled by Epstein and the former Israeli PM. I apologize, his name's slipping my mind right now. But I guess one thing I'll say about Virginia Giuffre is a lot of people do note inconsistencies in her story. A lot of the more salacious allegations come from her, and some of them have been debunked. Ehud Barak, yes, that's who the Israeli PM was. But Virginia Roberts was a troubled woman throughout her life, and I think just because she retracted some of her allegations against guys like Alan Dershowitz, that doesn't mean we should discount the entire book. I think it is worth reading, and we're just going to have to parse out what's true and what she might have confabulated.
Yeah. And given the fact that right before her passing, there was this car accident where she says she had a limited amount of days to survive. I mean, it doesn't really add to her credibility, but I mean, this could be bombshell too at the same time. It's just really frustrating trying to sift through all of the allegations being made and trying to figure out for ourselves what's true, what's not true. Unfortunately, you know, I believe a lot of the victims in these cases, but we need some evidence to back up these claims. And so we look forward to reading what those allegations are and continuing to report that, of course, to our audience. And then we kind of have to sift through and figure out what's true, what's not. So we'll continue to do that. I also wanted Ken to mention this report. Now you, and we're going to play this clip here because you flagged this for me. Now I was under the impression after Charlie Kirk's assassination that there was a explosive device that was planted at a local news Fox vehicle, a van, and that there were individuals that were arrested for it and charged with it. But that doesn't seem to be the case. Folks, take a listen to clip 8 because it's kind of taken a very, very strange turn. Take a listen.
They were arrested on suspicion of planting an explosive device under a Fox 13 news vehicle, but they have never been charged with any crime related to that. And today a judge released them from jail pending their trial. Abid Nasir in the yellow jumpsuit and his son Adil Nasir are charged with possessing a hoax weapon of mass destruction. The father is also charged with firearms possession offenses. The counts stem from what a defense attorney today said was inert dynamite found in their Magna home, as well as a small amount of marijuana found by agents investigating the attempted arson. Defense attorneys asked their clients that they be released from the Salt Lake County Jail, where they've been held for about a month, until their trial.
There may have been a federal warrant that initiated this action. I don't have access to that warrant yet to address how it is that somehow my client is connected to that in any way. But it appears, quite frankly, that he's not, given that after the execution of that warrant, he was not charged federally.
I don't believe that the crime that is spoken about with regard to the Fox 13 stuff, I don't think that really has anything to do with this case. And the fact that two were mixed together is a mystery, in my opinion.
Okay, Ken, this doesn't seem to make any sense. I mean, how are they somehow mixing these two together? It doesn't sound like there's a connection.
Yeah, and I think that's the larger story here. This does have a loose connection to the Charlie Kirk case because it was the day after Tyler Robinson was arrested. The FBI was actually searching his home as a family's home in his Magna neighborhood, and the whole neighborhood had to be evacuated. And it was later revealed that that's because they discovered a bomb underneath the van in Salt Lake City. And so they called the people over in Magna and said, hey, you know, there could be bombs under the media vans over there. You got to clear out the whole neighborhood. So it did affect the media's coverage of the story. But so far, investigators say there's no solid link between the assassination and this attempted bombing. But again, I think the larger story here is that it mirrors the Kirk case in that, you know, these two suspects were originally arrested and paraded around like they were definitely the guys who planted the bomb, much like in the Kirk case, how they had originally arrested George Zinn and then said, oh, he wasn't the guy. Later that night, Kash Patel is at a 5-star restaurant and he tweets out that, oh, we've got another suspect, and he had to retract that too. So it really goes, you know, what's going on in Utah? It's really sloppy investigations, it really seems like.
Well, Ken, I have a big problem with this because, number one, I mean, I don't like showing people's mugshots or saying their names, and I usually actually don't even, when there's an allegation, I don't say the individual's names. I usually try to avoid it for that reason alone, because there's a lot of times where, and I'll never forget, there was a kid I actually went to high school with, and he was accused of having possession of, or had taken a photo of a child in the bathroom, and so he was charged with possession of child pornography. And the police put his mugshot out there and they said, yeah, he did this. This is what he did. But they actually didn't even have access to his phone, and they never even saw the image itself. They just had a statement from a child that said that they saw a phone go over the stall, and that's what they used solely. It turned out that the individual never, and we've learned over a year later, that he actually never had the image on his phone. So I usually hold back before I make crazy allegations like this. And I try to do my best to ask people, what are the evidence that you have that links you, between these two people. Sadly, the FBI doesn't really lay out the case, unfortunately. So it really ticks me off when I hear names being thrown out there like this and allegations being made against people and their lives potentially destroyed. Again, we don't know what they were exactly doing, but this seems to be a major issue. I also want to highlight the fact that another issue that I have with the FBI director, he put out in the tweets that the whistleblowers were confirmed to be brought back and they had worked out a deal and everything was going well. He put that out way too early because I went to go call to verify that with their attorneys and their attorneys were still negotiating a deal. So the FBI director himself put out a tweet before it was even officially confirmed. And it was days later when everything was officially agreed to. So there seems to be this thing over at the FBI, and I'll let you comment if you'd like, where facts are put out there. And those who question, like myself, usually don't really end up on good terms with the FBI anymore. But there's a history of this new FBI putting things out there and saying things that aren't necessarily true. Are you witnessing that at all?
Yeah, and it's my understanding that the whistleblowers like Steve Friend and Garrett O'Boyle still aren't actually back to work. So that's, I guess, another story to dig into. But yeah, I'm totally in agreement with you. It was very irresponsible to connect these two men to the attempted bombing. And I think a lot of people noted that they're Pakistani nationals. So of course it went viral over Twitter that this was some sort of radical Islamic terrorism case. Now we have the actual man who was charged. His name's Christopher Solomon Proctor. I will name him because he is charged and he's just some 45-year-old Utah man. He was seen in all black and, you know, he was driving a Porsche, so he was rich. It's a very bizarre case and we need to dig into him further. But this all, you know, underscores what you're just saying about how we can't jump to conclusions here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little frustrating that this is what you have to deal with because I would hate to slander someone's name without there being enough evidence there to back up these claims. I want to ask you as well about the FBI now leading the investigation into that hunting stand that was located outside of Palm Beach International Airport. Apparently, according to reports, at a clear sight of the president's Air Force One arrival and exit. So it would have had a decent shot if the president had gotten off and on the plane before they spotted this. Secret Service obviously being the one to discover it first. FBI Deputy Director Dan Bongino coming out and saying that, yes, they've taken down the stand. It's being given over to an FBI lab now. What else are you learning about this? Because, again, this seems like a very strange thing, but it also might also have some kind of like common themes related to previous assassination attempts as well.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to talk about this, because if you read the state search warrant for Ryan Ruth, the man who was convicted of attempting to assassinate Trump at his Palm Beach golf course in September 2024, in fact, he scoped out that exact same airport, and the state police note that he's seen about 5 days before he eventually made his attempt on the golf course. He drives in the parking lot to the public area at the airport, and he was scoping out where Trump parks his plane. So that's sort of different. It's not where Trump gets on and off, but clearly Ryan Ruth was attempting or contemplating his assassination attempt at that exact same airport where now we're finding this hunting stand that has another line of sight to where Trump was deplaning and boarding. So it just raises troubling questions about why security wasn't tightened after the Ruth case when they knew that, yes, assassins are looking at this airport as what seems to be a soft target for getting at the president.
Yeah, and that's deeply concerning, and I think most Americans right now are worried about this. I mean, they're continuously trying to take shots at President Trump, and this needs to be looked into. Do you have confidence that the FBI is going to be able to handle this appropriately?
Well, you know, judging on the track record, no, I don't have much confidence. I guess it's good that they're taking the hunting stand to Quantico to analyze it for DNA. I think they're very serious about getting to the bottom of this. To give them the benefit of the doubt, when all this stuff happened under Ryan Ruth, that was obviously a previous administration, a previous regime, and we saw some pretty gross mishandling of evidence in the Ryan Ruth case. I mean, they took apart his rifle And then when the defense tested it again, it wasn't even working. So it threatened to collapse the whole case. They tainted some of the witnesses in that case. So, you know, given how close Dan Bongino and Cash Patel are to Trump, I got to imagine that they're putting their top guys on this. And hopefully, you know, unlike what happened in the wake of the Charlie Kirk case, they'll get all their ducks in a row and make sure their evidence is solid before they drag somebody's name through the mud in connection with this.
Yeah, we hope that's the case, Ken. Ken, thank you for joining us and giving us this update. I appreciate all the incredible work you do over at HeadlineUSA.com. Give them a follow on X if you want to know everything regarding all these good cases that are important to follow. You got to give him a follow on X. He's the only one covering these things and the only one digging into all the court documents. So make sure you do just that. Ken, thank you as always.
Thanks again.
All right, folks, we continue to talk about how non-U.S. citizen foreigners are somehow, some way getting CDL licenses, and they're going around our country just driving these semi-trucks and doing whatever the heck they want. Well, the Department of Transportation has really made this a top priority. We're thankful for that because these individuals should not be operating trucks very, very clearly. I mean, they can't even read in English. They can't speak in English. And so having them operate these vehicles is extremely dangerous. We've seen it time and time again that they are the ones who are causing fatal accidents on the roads. But there's a very interesting clip that was released over the weekend by Sean Duffy, who is obviously leading the Department of Transportation. Sean Duffy, in clip 4, released this video of a American truck driver stopping a foreigner who's driving the wrong way on a highway. Take a look.
I mean, what the f*** are... What are you doing?
I'm going that way. Keep us right here. But it's not working. I'm going down.
Let me ask you a question, man.
Okay.
You are going the wrong way down the freeway. You are committing a felony right now.
Okay, what I'm doing, sir?
Well, one, why the f*** are you going the wrong way down the freeway?
That's the right, I'm doing it back. Go ahead, sir.
Well, no, I'm just asking because...
I'm so sorry, but where is the phone? I go that side, but that's not...
Yeah, turn around when you have a clear spot. Okay. Don't even move your truck. Turn your hazard lights on, for one. Okay. Turn your hazard lights on now. Your hazard lights, your blinkers. Your blinkers, your hat. Turn your hazard lights on. They're on, okay.
Okay,
Unreal.
Yeah, it is unreal. The reality of it is that these companies have decided that they were going to put all of our lives at risk and have now exported these jobs to foreigners who, in many cases, illegally enter this country. You see, states like New York are coughing up driver's licenses to non-U.S. citizens. In fact, they're giving regular driver's licenses to individuals they don't even know their first name on. We see it time and time again. We've already showed you twice. Two different cases where New York State has given over licenses to individuals who literally have no name, and they say that on their license. States like California and New York are putting all of our lives at risk when they decide to hand over these CDL licenses just to whoever comes into our country. They can't read. They don't know how to operate these cars. They are low IQ'd, as you can see this one right here. Not even caring. Not even, look, doesn't even have an ounce of emotion. Three people just died. I believe all three of them were immigrants as well. No care in the world. Just decides, missed the turn. Great spot to do a U-turn. No care in the world for anyone coming behind me. Again, this is some low IQ activity, and we've done this to ourselves by allowing these illegals into our country and giving them jobs that they aren't qualified for in the first place. You see, a lot of these companies have decided to abandon, and I would say it's treason at this point when you decide that you're going to go for cheaper labor and hire people who aren't qualified for positions like that. You see, they're trying to save a couple of dollars at your expense, literally at your expense. Now, thankfully, the Department of Transportation is trying to find that truck driver and trying to go after him because he should not be, number one, working in our country. And if he's not a U.S. citizen, he should be deported immediately. He didn't even know what a hazard light was when the other truck driver is trying to say, put your hazards on. He has to constantly repeat himself time and time again. Why have we done this to our own country? Why have we done this to American people? Save a couple of dollars? See, we really have a massive issue here, and the last 4 years really highlighted it. The illegals who have entered our country have almost exclusively come from low IQ countries. I know people hate to say that out loud, but when you look at a map and you see who's come into our country, you realize there is a common theme here. Thankfully, Sean Duffy is getting to the bottom of this and going to try to dig into who this is. Because if he was allowed to go down this highway driving the wrong way, because he had to. Oh, yeah, I have to go. I have to. No care in the world for who he'd kill. Thankfully, a truck driver stopping him. What the heck are we doing to our country when this is what's going on? We've allowed these people to invade our country, and they don't care for American lives. There's no care in the world. He's being told he's driving down the wrong way, down a one way. And he's just telling you he has to. He's got to get somewhere. He's got to go somewhere. There's no navigational system setting him down this way. This is low IQ activity. At what point do we say enough is enough? How many Americans have to have their lives put at risk? Now, again, thankfully, this truck driver was paying attention, decided to pull him over to the side of the road, tell him not to move until he has a clear line of sight to get out. But who knows? Who knows if they'll ever catch him? This is a major issue, and we should not back down from this one because it puts all Americans' lives at risk. It truly, truly does. They can't even read the signs. He doesn't even know what a hazard light is. What the heck is happening to this country? Obviously, it's at the cost of you and I, obviously, but the Biden regime had no problem allowing these people in. And if you dare speak up, you're a racist. Folks, I want to remind you all over at the alexjonesstore.com, it's BOGO on the sea moss gummies. So head on over right now to the alexjonesstore.com and make sure you grab yourself some of those sea moss gummies. I know so many of you are big fans of this. I love it myself. It definitely helps if you are someone who's constantly dealing with bloating. Definitely helps you with that. There's also a bunch of incredible products right now on sale over at the alexjonesstore.com. And when you make a purchase over there, well, it helps us get our next operation up and running. So if you want to make sure that InfoWars never misses a beat, whether we're InfoWars or another name, head on over right now to the alexjonesstore.com. Every time you make a purchase, you help us stay in this information battle. And we greatly appreciate it when you do just that. All right, don't go anywhere. We got more to unpack and so many incredible guests joining the show in just a few moments. Mark Lucas is joining us in the next hour as well as Aaron Wright. So don't go anywhere.
I started having seizures like a few years ago, and everybody in my family knows I'm a neuroscientist.
What did you do to fix it?
Methylene blue.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on here talking about it.
This stuff works, man.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
You shouldn't have to tell a doctor about methylene blue. I think everybody should know about it. It's changed my life.
I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures without it. And I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it. I started taking it. And boy, let me tell you something. What a blessing.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
Let me tell you something. I'm walking without a cane. I take one pill a day of the ivermectin with the methylene blue. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
It is a miracle, and it's been proven for 100 years. You know, it's one of the most well-proven drugs out there. My kids take it. My wife takes it.
Everybody takes it.
I used to have to pay, $10,000 a week?
Right.
To get it in my arm and sit there for 6 hours a day to get it pumped in my system. And now I can take two pills or drink it once a day.
Right.
And pay what? I don't know. $30, $40 a bottle of it.
Depends on what the sale is, yeah.
And it's helping me to have a quality of life that I didn't have before that I have now. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I don't care what anybody says. I know what it's like with it, and I know what it's like without it.
Yeah!
Welcome back to the American Journal. Time is flying by over here. We're heading into the second hour of the show, and a lot is going to be happening in just a few moments, so you're going to want to be here, of course, for that. Mark Lucas joining the show. He's got a lot to sign off on because, well, what you probably already assumed, Zohran Mehdani, that's the guy who's running for New York City mayor. I call him a jihadist all the time, but it looks like he actually is, and he's also a communist as well, so he's got quite the resume. That apparently, according to New York voters, makes him very qualified to run the city of New York. Obviously, if you've fought for this country over in the Middle East, you are not happy about this whatsoever. Or if you're just someone who's been paying attention to what goes on around the country, around the world, yeah, you're not happy about this. So Mark's going to be joining us in a few moments to talk about that. Plus, obviously, the incidents that took place both in Israel, well, in the Gaza area between Israel and Hamas. We'll also be sounding off about that because there's a lot to go over there. President Trump saying that if Hamas doesn't calm things down, that we will do it for them. And I don't know what that looks like, but we'll talk about that in a few moments with Mark. We'll also be joined in studio by Aaron Wright. He's running for Texas Attorney General. He is a fighter. He is someone who Ken Paxton has endorsed to replace him as he makes his way to the U.S. Senate. And we're looking forward to having him here because, you know, he's someone who worked over at the DOJ previously. He worked under Miss Pam Bondi, and he understands the lawfare. He understands what's going on behind the scenes. And so it's going to be great to have him in studio to talk about just that. Obviously, Barack Obama, very upset saying that President Trump is weaponizing the DOJ, which would be laughable if there weren't so many victims of the Obama-Biden regime going after their political opponents, of course. So we look forward to having him on the show to talk about just that, plus a lot more going on all around the world. In the third hour of the show, we've got some two incredible guests and stories the mainstream media probably won't even tell you about. Dr. James Thorpe is going to be joining the show. He is a board-certified OBGYN. He is one of the very few doctors who was very aggressive when the COVID jabs were being pushed on pregnant women. And he is now standing off about a new report, new study that shows that the Pfizer birth control injectables, well, they might actually be causing women to develop brain tumors. And there's about 1,200 lawsuits against Pfizer alleging just that. So he's going to be discussing it with us because he was one of the very few to also warn about those risks. And again, not many women talk about the risk of taking birth control. And I want to talk to him about that because whether you have daughters, obviously wives, whoever you have in your love, in your life, we need to talk about this because this affects them. They don't give you the warnings about what actually happens when you take birth control, but it is extremely, extremely alarming. Now, we're also going to be sounding off, too, later in the show on homelessness. It's a major crisis in blue cities, and it almost exclusively truly does affect blue cities. When you're going through cities like Portland, Austin, you're just completely shocked when you're driving around and you see the massive amounts of both men and women who are struggling with addiction issues, just living on the streets. And one independent journalist has been on the ball with all of this, and he's going to be joining us. He's actually exclusively reporting on Portland's issues with homelessness right now, the crisis they're in. And I saw and I learned about Kevin's work, Kevin Dahlgreen, because Kevin is on the ground right now, and he has, you know, gotten to know the homeless community over there. But he also is the one dealing with these fentanyl overdoses. And sadly, over the weekend, he filmed it and he posted it on social media. In one of his reports, he noticed that there was a man on the street who appeared to look like he was sleeping, but he was frozen. And then when he got closer, he realized that man has actually deceased and had died allegedly from a fentanyl overdose. That's according to him. Now, he called the police in Portland, and sadly, it took them roughly, I believe it was over 2 hours to respond. People walking by, even people threatening to pickpocket the man. It's devastating. We blurred his face because we don't know if his loved ones have been notified. But we'll bring you that story because Kevin's been on the ground and he has done some incredible, incredible work as an independent journalist. I want to make sure we highlight his work, of course. So a lot happening in the second and third hour of the show. So I'm glad you guys are buckling in with us, of course. Like I said, we've got Mark joining us in just a few moments and he's going to sound off on everything regarding Zohran Mehdani and so much more. So make sure you stay tuned to that. I also wanted to play a BBC, and we'll do this later too, a BBC report because it's absolutely devastating. And it highlights how Afghan men and their wives are selling off their daughters to pedophiles. Okay, you're going to want to see this one. It's absolutely disturbing. Don't go anywhere. There is more American Journal to unpack in the second hour.
I also notice your cup is stained blue on the inside.
I've been caught.
You got a little, did you find some methylene blue floating around here?
I did, man. I commandeered some from Harrison's office.
Yeah, it's JonesStore.com. Check out the supplements we have, 25% off apparel. Methylene blue you can get for 50% off if you get a subscription and you never run out. So,
amen.
I know Stuart's going to be looking for a bottle. I'm going to go try to track one down for him. While
if you don't mind, I'm a bottle that fills too.
You like both. What do you like better?
You know what? I like them both.
Okay.
When I'm traveling, the pills definitely.
Yeah.
It's easier.
Yeah, it's not going to, you're not worried about it breaking open or.
No, on the way over here, I took a couple.
Yeah.
You know, while I'm driving.
Yeah. So with driving, did you feel more alert while you were driving or?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I took a couple shots while I'm in here in lieu of coffee. You guys ran out of coffee, so I went and got some methylene blue.
That's all he needs is a little methylene blue.
To the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back to the second hour of the American Journal. I'm excited that you're all joining us today because there's a lot to sound off about. And it's been a very, very busy weekend. Sadly, New York City, it looks like, might be handed off to a, I know a lot of people are just saying it, so I could just say it. He's a jihadist and he's a commie. And it's really devastating to sit back and watch because New York City, my former home, I'm from New York. I used to work in New York City all the time, lived right outside of the city, is about to be taken over. And it's not something you want as someone who loves that city. Obviously, it's gone through a lot of communist leaders, Bill de Blasio. But this one, it might be the death blow for New York City. And it's upsetting because, you know, Zohran Mamdani has been very controversial. He debated Andrew Cuomo and the Republican candidates over the weekend, and I believe it was actually on Thursday or Friday, and just sat back, watched, and I was completely shocked when I saw Mamdani try to take a jab at Andrew Cuomo by alleging he never visited a mosque during his time as governor. Now, apparently, he thinks that's a qualifier for those who want to run for office in the United States. Take a listen to clip 10 and how Mamdani tries to use it as an attack on Andrew Cuomo.
For him to set foot in a mosque. He had more than 10 years, and he couldn't name a single mosque at the last debate we had that he visited. And what Muslims want in this city is what every community wants and deserves. They want equality, and they want respect. And it took me to get you to even see those Muslims as part of this city. And that, frankly, is something that is shameful and is why so many New Yorkers have lost faith in this politics.
Yeah, except, you know, that is totally false. I've worked with the Muslim community for many years.
Name a single mosque you went to when you were the governor. Can you name a single mosque you went to in 10 years?
Before you were ever here. They were
before I was here.
Isn't that interesting? Apparently now you need to attend a mosque if you want to run for New York City mayor. You need to bow down and kiss the ring. No, we don't. No, we don't. This is the United States of America. This is a Christian nation. For him to even make such an outlandish claim shows how emboldened these people have become. They have come to our country looking for refuge. And sadly, they now, instead of offering to contribute to our country, want us all to bow down to them. That is not how this works. Now, again, as a former New Yorker, I've worked in New York City for many years. I would literally drive into the city, and I was always kind of shocked at, give you one incident, when I was heading into ESPN to do a shift, and all of a sudden there was a traffic jam, and it was empty taxis just parked everywhere. In the middle of the street, just stopped. And it's because they had decided to pray. Now, I asked someone who was Iranian specifically, what does that mean when they just sit there and just parked their cars in the middle of the street rather than pulling off to the side so everyone else could drive? And she said it was a sign of dominance, that they were trying to insert dominance in your country because they don't do that in Iran. And that was completely shocking for me because we all sit here and want to be very peaceful. We want to coexist with others. But the reality of it is this is a hostile takeover, and they're forcing us to just accept that. Now, Mamdani isn't backing down. He doesn't like to be called, obviously, a jihadist or a terrorist sympathizer. But the reality of it is he finds himself cozying up to these individuals in photos. There was a photo that really got people ticked off, and rightfully so. Survivors of the 9/11 World Trade Center terror attack are going after Mamdani now after they saw him smiling in a picture with an unindicted co-conspirator. Yeah, that would probably fire up anyone who actually loves this country, but most importantly, has a lot to say against Islam and what it's done to this country. Now, again, we can coexist with people who want to be peaceful. That is something that we do well in this country. But they're not coming here to coexist with us peacefully. In fact, they want to take over. And it's very, very clear of just that. We're going to play a clip for you, too, in a little bit, because this one's even more interesting. It has a lot to do with somebody who works on Madani's campaign saying this has been in the works for a very long time. Before we get that deep into everything, let me bring in Mark Lucas, because he is the founder of the Veteran Action, a vet in this country, served over in Afghanistan, and he has a lot to sound off about. I know you just recently did, Mark, over with the New York Post, so we're excited to have you on the program today. A lot of us are on edge. I'm infuriated when I see Zohran Mahdani saying that we need to, number one, coddle the Muslim community and goes after Andrew Cuomo for not showing up to a mosque, because it's one thing to do that. It's another thing where, you know, I'm surprised Andrew Cuomo didn't say, well, when was the last time you went to a church? That would be one way to go back after him. But I know most importantly, when you saw that picture, that photo of him smiling with the 9/11 co-conspirator, the unindicted one, I'm sure that had a really, really sickening reaction for you. Describe what you see here in this picture, because a lot of people are on edge.
As a military veteran, I want to warn the American people that Zohran is not only a risk to New York City, but he's also a risk to the United States of America. I joined the military after 9/11. I vividly remember the Twin Towers falling, and that was my motivation to join. I wanted to kill the people that were responsible for that radical ideology, who murdered innocent people in New York City and Pennsylvania and at the Pentagon. So I saw Zohran openly campaigning and posting photos of him with an unindicted co-conspirator of the World Trade Center attacks in the 90s, it really opened my eyes. I wasn't paying close attention to this race. I thought it would be impossible for a communist and a Muslim to win the mayoral race in New York City. But last week, after seeing the debate, after seeing his poll numbers rise, I felt like I had to step forward and remind people that we as military veterans all across the country, we have never forgotten 9/11. Now, I understand there's a lot of people that are black-pilled that think New York City's lost and Chicago and Los Angeles. But we as veterans, we do not believe in giving up any ground overseas. We should not be giving up these iconic cities all across the country. And New York City is an iconic city around the world. When people think of the United States, they think of the city skyline of New York, and they also think of Washington, D.C., and they think of Chicago and Los Angeles, these great cities that President Trump hasn't given up on. And if we continue to give up this ground, I want people to understand that these people aren't coming here to America to assimilate. They're not here to embrace our freedoms. They are conquerors. And that person, that radical imam that Zohran posted that photo with, he believes in jihad. He wants to take over New York City. And we as veterans are stepping forward to let people know that we have to take this race serious.
Mark, it is deeply concerning. We just saw a poll that was recently released, and although it's very close, it would get closer if the Republican candidate were to drop out Andrew Cuomo, and he's going to have to at some point. Andrew Cuomo and Mahdani would be very close, about a 4-point difference between the two. So that would give us a little bit of hope there. Again, I never thought I'd be cheerleading for Andrew Cuomo to win a race, but here we are. But like you just said, you know, these individuals have come into our country, and they're running under this socialism party, and they're pretending like socialism is just socialism and it's just giving free things out. But they're actually communists, and they have very deep ties to the communist parties in Cuba and elsewhere. And I don't think most Americans understand it. And the Zohran Mahdani candidacy for mayor has been in the works for a while. We know this because Steven Crowder sent his undercover team in, and they were able to grab audio from one of the directors of Zohran Mahdani's campaign. And ultimately, he's just detailing how this has been in the works since 2014 in clip 11. Let's take a listen.
Like four of the people that I worked with on AOC's campaign are actually on Zohran's campaign. And then a couple of the people I worked with, Jamal Bowman's campaign, are actually on Zohran's campaign. It's not like this, this just came out of nowhere. Like, not at all. Like, this has been a coordinated, organizing effort for, since 2014.
Now, he's the canvassing director for Mahdani, and we don't know if he still has his job after this video details what you just heard there, him saying that this has been ongoing since 2014. tell us a little bit about what you know about this, because I don't think most Americans realize the difference between a lot of these people, these radical individuals, is that they are able to plod. They're very patient. And so running for New York City mayor is a part of their plan. I mean, they were able to successfully take over London. It looks like New York City is next. And we're even hearing and seeing reports that Atlanta might also be next on their vision. But what do you know about these people when it comes to just kind of patiently coming up with a plan and taking years to sit back and to wait before they could actually launch that plan?
In Afghanistan, there was a saying that we as Americans have the watches, but the Afghans own the time. They're very patient. And over the weekend, I was sharing stories of what I witnessed as a platoon leader in Afghanistan in 2010. You know, the Afghan elders that I had to conduct key leader engagements with, they had small little boys that were called chai boys, maybe 8 or 9 years old, who were at every single one of our meetings giving us tea. And my Afghan interpreter told me that those young boys were sold into sexual slavery and their parents were willing to sell their children in hopes that they would be able to be sent to Kabul to get a higher education from these elders. But my interpreter proudly told me that many of these young boys would grow up to become men and they'd come back and they would kill those elders. But also the Afghans would beat their women. They have no respect for women. And I had three strong, brave women attached to my unit. They're members of my female engagement team, and they all just so happened to be blonde haired. And we had to constantly protect them from our Afghan allies in the Afghan border patrol. But when we'd go out on a foot patrol, you'd have these sick Afghan men just hover around them. So I'm trying to warn people that these aren't folks that you want in your neighborhood. These aren't people that you want in control of your city council. They will tell you everything that you want to hear on the campaign trail. But as we've seen in Dearborn, Michigan, in Minneapolis, Minnesota, even in Texas, that there are these radical Islamists that will say whatever they can to get into power. But once they reach a tipping point, when they feel like they can dominate you, they will. And that culture I was talking about in Afghanistan, that was mainstream. My military commanders told us just to focus on the mission, and we had to bite our tongue on a lot of what we saw over there. You had a lot of husbands and fathers that saw how these people beat their women, how they raped their boys, and we wanted to protect them, but we were told to stand down.
Yeah, Mark, and you know, we actually had this clip, and I wasn't even intending on playing this with you. I was going to play it separately, but since you brought it up, I want to play it. Clip six highlights how families, fathers, are selling their daughters in Afghanistan to pedophiles. Take a listen.
5 years old, 7 years, 9 years, 6 years old. These are girls already sold into marriage, many too young to even know their own ages. 8 years, they're often prompted by their guardians. 6 years, the husbands they'll go to are a decade or more older. The last to talk is 5 years old. The youngest, in her father's arms, is a seven-month-old baby given in lieu of medical bills. The girls have no say. This in one of Afghanistan's poorest villages. And the deprivation here means girls are being sold into marriage earlier and more often. There's not enough room in the tent for all the parents who want to show us their young daughters they've sold. We don't want to sell them, she says, but we're poor and we have to eat. Hajira had fetched an above-average price, more than $6,000. Then she got injured, and the deal was called off. I'd already sold her to a family, her father tells us, but they brought her back when she got injured and said they couldn't take care of her, so I never got any of the money. Now he's on the hunt for another buyer. Once final payments made for his eldest daughter, she'll be sent to her new family. She wants to study and is too young to question what's happening.
When you got married?
So as you can see here, it's just an ongoing issue that's never ending. And it's devastating to sit back and watch all of this, Mark, because this is normal for them. And I remember when we were taking in these Afghans after the failed withdrawal from Joe Biden's administration, there was a service member who was sexually assaulted, according to reports, on a military base. I believe it was in New Mexico. And we rarely heard anything else about that. But we were just told that she was sexually assaulted by a group of these men. We don't know if they were ever deported. We don't know whatever happened to them. I tried to follow up. We don't. I submitted FOIA requests. They won't give me any information in regards to it. And so, yeah, time and time again, this is what we're dealing with. This is the reality that we're dealing with. And enough is enough with this. I don't understand why we continue to allow this. You know, I live in Texas, and you mentioned it. Plano, Texas has been taken over in certain areas. And, you know, Epic is well known for this. But, I mean, they've literally named streets after Islamic conquerors. And we're sitting here pretending like this isn't going on here. But, Mark, it's very obvious that it is. And, you know, very few are willing to call it out. Why do you think everyone's so afraid to talk about this issue?
Well, I'm telling all of America, you need to wake up and open your eyes. And it starts in New York City with this mayoral race. But these people are conquerors. And those images that you've shown of those parents who are willing to sell their children to Afghanistan, I saw that time and time again in 2010. I'm a husband. I'm a father of three young children. One of the most influential books I read was called Father, the Family Protector. That is our role. These are the type of people that we are inviting into our country, that we're allowing to take over cities in Minnesota and Texas and now maybe New York City. The women that are attached to my unit, if we wouldn't protect them, they would have been beaten and raped by those Afghan men. They have no respect for our culture. They have no love for America. They want to dominate us. But I can tell you, veterans all across the country, we love this country. We fought and we're willing to die for our Constitution and for the things that made America great. We will never forget 9/11. We will never quit on New York City. And if we have to fight again, we will. I can tell you so many veterans are excited to defend this country, to secure our southern border, to take back our big cities. We have to tell the American people our experience. It might be painful. It might not be politically correct, but these stories must be told.
Yeah, they must be told. And, you know, we actually have President Trump speaking out about Madani, and I want to play that clip for you because he's reacting to the story that we actually brought you on to talk about. So let's take a clip, listen to clip 20.
What do you think of Mandami's photo with the 93 World Trade Center bombing?
Yeah, no, it's a shame. Look, the Mandami thing is it's a disaster waiting to happen. We can't have a communist in charge of a great supposedly free enterprise, kind of a representative city. So I think it's, if you have a communist mayor, I think it's going to be very tough for him and for the city.
Do you think he should have posted something like this so close to the election?
Oh, I think it's a shame that that particular man is endorsing him and very friendly with him. You can see there's a relationship. He blew up the World Trade Center, right?
And Mr. President,
didn't the man you're talking about blow up the World Trade Center? And he's friends with Mandami?
Yeah, it's a scary situation that New York's in. Your reaction to President Trump calling it out?
Well, President Trump is a New Yorker through and through. I mean, growing up as a young kid in the Midwest, you look at New York City and Donald Trump was a huge part of the ethos of New York. And he's absolutely right. It's not only going to be hard on New York, it's going to be hard on the city council. It's going to be a very difficult position for the city to move forward. So we have to continue to hold him accountable. Like you said earlier, there's a new poll that shows him head to head against Cuomo only up by 4 points. He's within the margin of error. I think we can continue to hold him accountable, tell these stories, and there may be a victory. We can't give up on New York.
Yeah, we can't give up on New York. And, you know, before you go, I wanted to play this clip for you as well. It's going to be clip 12 because we were watching what was happening over the weekend, and both Israel and Hamas, it looks like exchanging fire. Israel is blaming Hamas, but later we're learning reports that Hamas leadership may have not been aware of any of this, and this might have kind of been a rogue situation. But President Trump is sounding off in clip 12. Let's take a listen.
We have told them we want to disarm. And they will disarm. And if they don't disarm, we will disarm them. And it'll happen quickly and perhaps violently. But they will disarm. Do you understand me?
Yes. You say
because
quickly.
You always, everyone says, oh, well, they won't disarm. They will disarm. And I spoke to Hamas. And I said, you're going to disarm, right? Yes, sir, we're going to disarm. That's what they told me. They will disarm or we will disarm them. Got it? Okay.
What is the deadline you're going to put on that? You say quickly, sir. You said quickly, but what is the deadline you're going to put on that before you take action?
A reasonable period of time. Pretty quickly. A reasonable period of time.
Congratulations.
Yeah, so that's the president answering and saying just that. Your reaction to President Trump saying that we will disarm them, do you think it will be the United States directly? Or do you think the Arab nations should be forced to step in on this because they've allowed this issue to go on and they don't step in unless it's a peace deal that they want to be a part of?
It would be nice for the Arab nations to take the lead on this, but we just can't trust them. And Hamas needs to understand that Donald Trump is not Barack Obama. He's not Joe Biden. If you want to question his intent, look at what he did with the strike on Iran. This is a guy who understands how to achieve peace through strength. So they can play around and they can find out. But I'll tell you that this is going to be a tenuous deal. You've got two groups of people that have hated each other for thousands of years. It's not going to be easy. But President Trump, Jared Kushner, and Steve Witkoff, they are dedicated to peace. I know there's going to be meetings in Israel this week. There's going to be some ups and downs. There's going to be some challenges. But ultimately, I do believe in President Trump that he's got the leverage to force Hamas to put their weapons down.
Yeah, we hope so. Because, you know, the images of and the video was just absolutely gut-wrenching of seeing them drag off Palestinians into the streets and then and executing them without a trial, without any evidence showing that they helped Israel out. They didn't care. They just went with whatever they wanted to do. And there needs to be accountability for that. I also, before you go, I wanted to ask you, there's reports, and it hasn't yet been confirmed by the Pentagon, so I want to make that clear, that the United States is working with Saudi Arabia to potentially have some type of military defense agreement. We did see, obviously, it was very controversial, but Pete Hegseth correcting the Secretary of War, correcting kind of the reports that were coming out in regards to Qatar having access to one of our air bases. Are you concerned with us working very closely with Saudi Arabia and Qatar?
We have to work with allies that share our vision, and sometimes it might be complicated. I had to deal with this in Afghanistan, for instance, where we're fighting foreign fighters in Afghanistan. We had to work with people within the Afghan government. Like I said, that my military commander said that we had to look the other way when we saw some of the atrocities they're doing in their neighborhoods. So I do have trust in President Trump and Secretary Hegseth. They believe in strength through peace. I haven't seen this before in years. You know, President Trump is dedicated to peace. And I grew up in the United States here after 9/11. I fought in these forever wars. It seemed like the military-industrial complex and our governmental leaders, by the way, many of which have never pulled a trigger in combat, always wanted to get us engrossed in new wars, whether it was with Ukraine or with Iran. So I trust President Trump, his track record. I also went to South Korea at the height of the tensions with Kim Jong-un. I was able to see President Trump walk us off the precipice there, or walk us back from the precipice to save us from another war. So I believe in President Trump. We always have to advocate for peace. As a warfighter, I can tell you that peace has to be the number one objective, and we need to be able to work with people that share that vision.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Mark, thank you for joining the show today, and thank you for your insight on all these issues. We greatly appreciate it, of course. And thank you for your service to this great country. We appreciate it. Mark Lucas, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Folks, I want to remind you all right now, when you head on over to the alexjonesstore.com, you're helping fund our very next operation. And we have some incredible deals over at the shop right now that you're going to want to indulge in. It's BOGO on sea moss gummies. Those are my favorite, one of my favorites, I should say. And I know for many of you at home, this is one of your favorite gets. So you're going to want to head on over there and indulge in this BOGO sale. And then also download the app, because we don't know when that front door is going to be locked, and we're ready setting up our next operation so you don't miss a day. Stay in touch with us, of course, over at the alexjonesapp.com. It's the alexjonesapp.com. Download the app today. We greatly appreciate you to do so, of course. And that's how we all stay connected. Now, folks, we've got a lot happening in the rest of the show. Aaron Wright's joining the program. He's running for Texas AG. He also was previously over at the DOJ. But there's a lot of things going on right now, and he's going to answer those questions that I have for him, specifically about Barack Obama trying to criticize President Trump about a weaponized DOJ. It's like I've heard that before. A lot happening in just a few moments. Don't go anywhere.
So you were just telling me that you had a brain disease.
I started having seizures like a few years ago, and everybody in my family knows I'm a neuroscientist.
What did you do to fix it?
Methylene blue.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on here talking about it.
This stuff works, man.
I take it every day as well. And
RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
You shouldn't have to tell a doctor about methylene blue. I think everybody should know about it. It's changed my life.
I was in a wheelchair. That methylene blue, I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures without it, and I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it. I started taking it, and boy, let me tell you something. What a blessing.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
It is a miracle. It's been proven for 100 years. It's one of the most well-proven drugs out there.
Let me tell you something. I'm walking without a cane. I take one pill a day of the ivermectin with the methylene blue, and I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
My kids take it. My wife takes it.
Everybody takes it.
I used to have to take, $10,000 a week?
Right.
To get it in my arm and sit there for 6 hours a day to get it pumped in my system. And now I can take two pills or drink it once a day
right. And
pay what? I don't know, $30, $40 a bottle of it?
Depends on what the sale is, yeah.
And it's helping me to have a quality of life that I didn't have before that I have now. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I don't care what anybody says. I know what it's like with it, and I know what it's like without it.
Yeah!
I'm not paid to say this, not one dime. This is the best product you guys have ever had. You guys got to order it at the AlexJonesStore.com.
Our methylene blue, medical grade, made in Florida, is incredible. Cleans out your mitochondria, clarity, focus, energy. You've seen the rave reviews of every guest we've had on. It's game changing.
I feel like, wow, there's power in coalescing all your thoughts.
Did you hear our last guest, what she said happened to her?
No. What?
She said brain fog just lifted.
That's what it feels like.
I feel lighter. It's really interesting. I almost like feel smarter.
This stuff kicked in and it like instantly I just felt like this weird meditative energy. I don't know how to explain it. I don't feel jittery. I just felt like instantly like I went from 5 hours of sleep like I got last night to like 10 hours. I don't know how to explain it. This stuff's new to me, but I like it. Methylene blue works for me.
I feel it in my head and neck too. My brain's going really fast. I really like it.
Unlimited fabulous power!
Volunteer power!
You feel instant energy, but without the jitteriness of caffeine and focus. What I felt was focus, mental focus.
I do feel like it's eliminated the brain fog a lot.
I do subscribe to the methylene blue. I feel better. I feel like I'm 25.
Like I said, I've been taking the methylene blue, and it is freaking awesome. I actually subscribe monthly now to it, and I got a couple other people that I work with. I gave them it, and they did the same thing. I'm jacked up on the methylene blue. It's the best thing you guys have ever had. Please go to the Alex Jones.
Powered by Methylene Blue. Ultra Methylene Blue at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello.
Welcome back to the American Journal. Happy Monday, everyone. A lot going on over here. It was a chaotic weekend, trying to follow a lot of great news stories. But we found one that might give you a little bit of a laugh. And it was Barack Obama. We talked about it a little bit last week. Barack Obama going after President Trump for having an alleged weaponized DOJ. Now, that probably sounds familiar, given the fact that if you followed what was happening under the Obama-Biden regime, was exactly just that. But now Obama's playing ignorant, and he's the critic these days. Well, President Trump really not letting up on that in clip 13, and he calls out Obama directly. Take a listen.
All of these indictments caused Obama the other day on a podcast to say that right now democracy is being threatened.
Yeah, no, he says that all the time. He's the one that threatened it by spying on my campaign. He started it. Obama spied on my campaign, and he did it knowing it was illegal. He knew it was illegal. But he started the whole thing, and there were a lot of dishonest people, and I suspect they'll be caught.
Yeah, he doesn't like that at all. Joining me to discuss Aaron Wright, he's running for AG in the great state of Texas. He also formerly was working over the DOJ under Miss Pam Bondi, and he's an incredible attorney. So it's great to have you on the show today, my friend. You have quite the resume, so it's an honor to have you here.
Thank you, Brianna. Happy to be on the show.
Well, we are sitting here and we listened and we were laughing last week when Barack Obama was talking about a weaponized federal government because he's the expert on weaponizing the federal government. So your reaction to that, plus President Trump responding to it?
Yeah, look, anytime that the left talks about, oh, weaponized, President Trump is a king, the no kings rallies, weaponizing justice against us, rest assured this is just projection. Yeah. Because deep down inside, they know what they did when they had the power to do it. Barack Obama was the very hub of a spoken wheel conspiracy to destroy President Trump, to undermine his presidency, to throw him in jail. And so what President Trump there said is, no, this isn't weaponized anything. This isn't unfair. This is justice. When you violate federal law, even if you're a senior political or governmental appointee of Barack Obama, justice still applies to you, regardless of whether you're an R or a D. And so I like to see what's happening. And look, Barack Obama is crying his liberal tears up in Martha's Vineyard while he's building his new absolutely hideous monstrosity of a presidential library, which is as ugly as his presidency was.
I was laughing because someone put it up. I think it was Scott Adams put up a side by side of that library and like one of the towers of North Korea.
Yeah.
And because it was in an image of a troop had just deflected North Korea to come over to South Korea. And he's like, can you tell a difference? And you truly couldn't tell a difference. It actually looked identical. Why don't they always pick the most ugly buildings?
I think it's a reflection of the ugly spirit that animates them. Yeah. I mean, look, the built environment around us is a reflection of our philosophy. This is why, you know, when President Trump put out an executive order both during his 45th presidency and then reinstated a similar one during his 47th to ensure that all federal buildings, all statues are built in a classic American style. This is a reflection of the unity, harmony, beauty of our movement in contrast with the ugliness that came out of the architectural movements of the 60s, 70s, and 80s, which was inspired by a Marxist philosophy. So I know that this was not on our list of topics to talk about, but that library is ugly. Because the spirit that animates the left is, in fact, ugly.
It's like the Nancy Pelosi building that went up in San Francisco. It's so ugly. You just, like, chuckle because it's like these people just don't even care. I mean, they just don't even care to have pretty buildings named after themselves.
Yeah.
It's laughable at this point. But I wanted to shift gears a little bit because since we're talking about weaponization, a lot of senators, there's eight of them, were added to a list for Arctic Frost. And they're very upset because they were spied on by Jack Smith. Their call recordings were somehow submitted over to the DOJ special prosecutor. And now they're going after Jack Smith. You know, we heard Blackburn, Senator Blackburn, go out there, and she was very critical and very upset about it. So now she's referring Jack Smith to the DOJ for misconduct investigation and potential disbarment. I think it's proper to disbar him first and then go after him because he obviously weaponized the DOJ as well. Even though I don't even think he was technically a DOJ employee because he was a special prosecutor. How did that work
out? He's a special counsel. Look, Jack Smith was the poster child of hand-selected weaponized justice against Trump, right? Jack Smith became famous, or infamous, I should say, under two circumstances. Number one, he was a special counsel that was leading the charge against Trump for the, you know, classified documents at Mar-a-Lago, the criminal charges of which have been dismissed, and everything else is going away. And the second issue that Jack Smith led on was destroying anyone and everyone, up to and including the President of the United States, over J6. And so these, what Jack Smith did when he was a special counsel, completely unaccountable, unhinged, untethered, a weapon of the left, went after all of these senators during a narrow window from January 4 to January 7 of 2021. Right in the middle of that was J6. Why did Jack Smith go after these people? Well, the only real evidence that we see is that those senators and one congressman were just really close and loyal to the president. And so what Jack Smith was doing is going on a fishing expedition to go try to connect dots that didn't exist, pulling the metadata from these senators. You know, before the revelation that Jack Smith was spying on senators, you and I would have been called conspiracy theorists and dismissed for saying, oh, no, Barack Obama's and Biden's DOJ was spying on us. We would have said, that's crazy. That doesn't happen in this country. Please, we respect separation of powers. Well, turns out Jack Smith was spying on United States senators, violating the Constitution, separation of powers, privileges, all kinds of violations. And so I applaud Senator Marsha Blackburn's efforts to refer Jack Smith to the DOJ. So what's going to happen now is the DOJ's Office of Professional Responsibility is going to make a determination about whether that special counsel investigation was done in accordance with the highest professional standards expected out of Justice Department personnel. If the Office of Professional Responsibility deems that it was not up to the highest standards, then the DOJ will likely refer that violation to the state bars under which Jack Smith is licensed, New York and Tennessee. And so I expect that this is not going to go good for Jack Smith, nor should it go well for Jack Smith, because as President Trump said, we're not weaponizing justice against our political enemies. This is justice. When you violate the law, you deserve justice. And that's what Jack Smith, I trust, is going to get.
Yeah, Aaron, we call this the accountability tour for those who went out there and decided to weaponize the federal government and even local. I mean, Tish James, another one who deserves her own round of the accountability tour as well. And she's getting it, right?
She's getting it. Yes.
It's great to sit back and watch this happen. It's a start. It's a strong start, we're hoping. Could be a little bit stronger. I know there's a lot of critics out there who do think that, but we're thankful. We're thankful that this is all happening. And I also wanted to mention and kind of get your take on this, because we learned last week that there was, through FBI documents that were given over to John Solomon, that there were 30 million pieces of phone data that was extracted between the communications of those who were communicating, conservatives who were communicating with the White House on January 6th.
Right.
They were able to do this apparently without a warrant. They got it through a subpoena. But here's the thing, Adam Kinzinger, according to the report, voluntarily, I know, this is insane.
Soy boy Kinzinger, unbelievable. Oh my God.
It's craziness. But apparently he was willingly giving it over to the FBI. We don't know if Christopher Wray took it at the time, but they didn't have a warrant. He was okay with giving over that data to the FBI without a warrant. Is that even legal?
I don't know the answer to the question of whether it's legal, but it is par for the course on Adam Kinzinger. Of course, he's conspiring with the left so he can get, another few more clicks on standing on principle or whatever he likes to sort of like claim. He takes this holier than thou position on things. But look, I was just reflecting on this, Brianna. When I was on your show last, it was the day before Comey got indicted, and you and I were predicting what was going to happen. 24 hours later, Comey gets indicted, rightfully so, right? Under lying under oath and then obstruction of congressional proceeding. Then what happens a couple weeks later? John Bolton gets indicted. Then what happens another week later? Tish James gets indicted. President Trump is bringing blind justice to the people who have conspired to undermine this country, to lie, to violate the law. And look, like I said at the top of our moment together here, Barack Obama is at the center of this. And auto-pen Joe Biden just sort of sat back and let it all happen from 2020 to 2024. So I like to see what's happening. Kinzinger, I'm not surprised at all, is playing he's a useful idiot to the left. Of course, they'll chew him up and spit him out when his usefulness has expired. But I'm not surprised to see that he's involved here.
I mean, it's why Otto Penn gave him and all the other J6 committee members a pardon, because they were just doing what was best for the American people. But obviously,
just patriots, absolutely doing what's right.
I can't stand these people, and I truly hope people like Adam Kinzinger are also held accountable, because the fact that he was going to cough over that data and hand it over. I mean, I don't even know who it included. We'll probably learn as we learn more about all of this. But was so willingly to hand this over to Christopher Wray as if there was something criminally indictable in that is disgraceful. And then they just go after us and say, oh, it's MAGA going after. No, I mean, he was literally going after trying to put people in MAGA in prison.
Yeah, totally right. This is the thing. It is projection. And I mean that in like the psychological term. These people on the left under Obama, under Biden, are guilty as sin. And what do they then do in order to absolve themselves of the sins that they have committed against this country and our Constitution? They go out on their little speaking tours and their book tours and their media hits, and they point a finger at everyone else claiming that they're the ones weaponizing justice. They're the ones doing wrong. All we're doing is the right thing, and it pales in comparison to the full weight of the federal government that these Democrats mobilize against people on the right. Justice is coming. Justice will be done. I love to see what we're doing.
I love to see it. We're just in case you're tuning in right now, we're with Aaron Wright. He's running for Texas Attorney General. He's also formerly was over at the DOJ under Pam Bondi, and he's doing so much more these days as a truth teller. He's out here fighting the good fight, and we're excited to have him on the show today. I wanted to get your take on this because you're one of the very few candidates who is outspoken on the Islam issue here in the country, especially in Texas that we're facing right now. It's very, very important, and it's going to weigh heavily on this race. But you know, we just found out last week, and it was kind of like a last-minute push. We didn't have all the details, but according to reports, now we're learning more, that the Biden regime actually granted a visa to a man who was accused of participating in October 7th over in Israel. Apparently, he has ties to Hamas. He's a Hamas terrorist. His name, I'm going to butcher it, so we'll just go with Muhammad at this point. I can't really promise you what the last and the second last name is going to be.
They usually have like 10 names. It's, you know,
it's so, and it makes my job even harder.
I know.
It really does. I can't even imagine over at DHS. You know, I actually asked DHS one day, this is a little off topic, but I was asking them about the citizenship of someone who was in question, and his name was Muhammad. And they're like, lady, we've got like 30 of those right now just popping up into the system. You're going to give us some more details on this. We don't know who this guy is that you're talking about.
Right.
But it's really, really difficult, I guess, for the administration to kind of vet these people. But the Trump administration has been doing a great job. They don't want to create fear out there. So I hear from my sources that they are going out there and they are getting sleeper cells and they're getting them removed from the country, which is phenomenal. But this is an individual that we need to highlight because this is a guy who's accused of participating in October 7th, and he somehow makes his way to Louisiana. What the heck is going on here?
Well, let's be clear. Let's get the timeline. So October 7, 2023 happens. He arms up, joins with Hamas to invade and kill hundreds of Israelis. A year later, he applies for a visa to come into the United States in the summer of 2024. He lies on his visa application. This is during the Biden administration. During the Biden administration, there was virtually no vetting that was happening, right? And so you could just get away with lying on your visa application saying, no, you know, I'm not a terrorist. I'm not a bad guy. I'm just trying to come from a dangerous area overseas, right? And what does the Biden administration do? They say, okay, rubber stamp it. They let him move in. They give him lawful status to reside here in the United States. He starts off, first of all, he flies into Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport, DFW, makes his way up to Oklahoma, lives there for a little bit, then makes his way to Louisiana, where he allegedly was working at a restaurant until he was booked up by the U.S. Attorney's Office most recently. So what is this a reflection of? It's a reflection of two things. Number one, the gross lack of vetting during the Biden era. If this terrorist, this October 7th Hamas-sympathizing terrorist, right, is able to get into the United States, get a job in the United States, and live here, you know, presumably paying rent at an apartment, and no vetting happened during the Biden years, that's just one guy. How many tens, hundreds of thousands of other real bad guys came here during the Biden administration on top of the millions of illegal aliens that are here and by their very existence in the United States illegally are here violating federal law and are criminals and should be deported. But this guy gets here, and then what happens in January of 2025? Trump gets elected. He installs new United States attorneys, in this case, the Western District of Louisiana. And within a matter of 9 months, President Trump's DOJ is able to track this guy down, book him up, bring him into custody, and is now working up an indictment. And I expect federal charges, the harshest form. I don't know where he's going to go. He probably deserves to be in Gitmo. Maybe he'll be sent back overseas. I don't know. But I think it illustrates two very important things. Number one, how bad was the lack of vetting during the Biden administration, which an October 7th terrorist could get here? And then number two, how good is it to have a fresh administration in place that is actually affirmatively going out and finding these bad guys and locking them up? I love to see it.
Yeah, I love to see it too. And it's a little frustrating though, because I feel bad for the Trump administration. They have a lot of work when it comes to finding these individuals. You know, DHS, even under the Biden administration, admitted that they released hundreds of those alleged terrorists, people who had ties to terrorism in foreign countries into our country. And they only admitted to a couple of hundred. So you could just assume that the number is much high. Doing reporting over at the border, I had sources coming forward and saying the security cameras aren't working here and the Biden administration won't fix it.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't want people coming in or us knowing who was coming in and getting the actual number count. So we've been flooded with these people into our country, and it's going to take a lot of digging.
A lot of digging. But look, I think we're headed in the right direction. I think things are headed in the right way, whether we're talking about justice issues or finding bad guys or deporting illegal aliens. We're making progress. I like to see it. I want to see more of it. Americans want to see more of this. And so I am on the one hand very alarmed by this particular individual getting into the country, yeah, but I'm also very encouraged to see that President Trump's team, Attorney General Bondi's team, and the United States attorneys that have been appointed by the president around the country are doing the right thing and smoking these guys out.
I actually want to throw this at you because it kind of brought this back. We were talking about it early in the show. The Department of Transportation is going after someone who sounded like a foreigner. We don't know his immigration status or his name at all, so I won't put that title on him, but we do know that he has a heavy accent, and he's driving a truck down the wrong way, and yeah, an American truck driver stops him and tells him, dude, stop right now. You're going down the wrong way. And he can't even figure out what the word hazard means when he's being told to put his hazard lights on. We have the video playing for you right now. But the video is so gut-wrenching. But this is what's been going on. Blue states have been giving driver's licenses to foreigners. And now they're being hired. They're allowed to go on our roads. You know, New York, we now have two different cases of New York giving CDL licenses out to who we assume are illegal aliens.
Right.
And they don't even have a name. It literally says no name on the driver's license.
Right.
You know, it doesn't just stop at blue states. This is an issue that affects everyone throughout the country. How would you fight back on this issue if you were elected as AG?
Yeah, so you're exactly right at highlighting the issue here. Like, you've got blue states. You're right. It's not just a blue state problem.
Yeah.
It's also a red state problem because these trucks are literally means and methods of interstate travel. So this is a national issue. It's not a local or restricted to blue jurisdictions. But what you have is you do have blue jurisdictions that are allowing people to come in this country. They speak no English. Mm-hmm. Okay. And yet, in order for interstate travel to happen safely, effectively, and to keep the driving public protected, these means and methods of interstate travel have to be able to communicate under the national language, which for interstate travel needs to be English. This is an English-speaking country. You come here, you learn English. It ought to be, if you're going to drive around something that is hundreds of tons, right, and could kill people on the road, you have to be able to speak English, because that's what our law enforcement, peace officers, emergency response teams, other sort of traffic controllers, you got to be able to speak English. And so if you can't, you then become a threat to the peaceful, law-abiding, driving public. It's a huge problem. So as Attorney General in Texas, in order to be granted a CDL in Texas, part of the requirements is you have to be able to speak English. If there are jurisdictions within the state of Texas that are refusing to abide by those rules, or if there are subordinate political divisions that don't want to follow that or somehow skirting it or not supervising it, well, they're going to have a problem with me as Attorney General, because I'm going to come after you for violating state laws that require you to be able to communicate clearly and effectively, both understanding and verbalizing the English language. And the reason why blue jurisdictions are so spun up about this is not for any good reason. There's no logic behind it. But the reason why they don't want to mandate English, it's as silly as this. It's because it's racist.
Yeah.
Honestly, that's what it is. You look at how Gavin Newsom and some of these other political figures on the left are saying is, no. They come here. They need to be able to get a job and then learn English. It's like, no. You want to come here. You want to participate in our economy. You want to participate in civic life. You want to be integrated into the broader American, you know, ecosystem and the economy. You got to learn English. And especially if you're going to drive around an 18-wheeler, you have to do it.
Yeah. And we've seen it time and time again with that individual who is not a U.S. citizen. I believe he's from India, how he just made a U-turn in Florida with no regard for people. And sadly, he ended up killing immigrants.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And you saw the reaction from him. It was like this almost soulless, weird reaction. If you or I, who I'd like to think are decent people, here we are on the show, being decent Americans, that if we were responsible for some sort of terrible tragedy that was through our negligence, like, we would be broken over that. Here's a foreigner who came here, didn't speak English, kills an entire family through his own negligence, and the response, all the cameras are rolling, and he's just dead-eyed, dead on the inside. No reaction whatsoever. Those are not the people that we need or want in this country. Deport them now.
Yeah, and we need to. We need to, and I hope this guy is deported after he pays the price for this, because it's just, it's so devastating. No care in the world, just more care about him making this quick U-turn, and doesn't even blink an eye. It's absolutely devastating. Three lives completely lost. I want to play before you go clip 14 for you, because Senator Rand Paul and President Trump have gotten into a little bit of a scruffle online.
Yeah.
But Rand Paul is bringing up the argument that we're going out there, we're attacking these drug boats that are leaving Venezuela and making their way, what we think, to the United States with drugs like fentanyl on board. We saw there was a submarine that was just recently, the Department of War did go after them. And so, Rand Paul thinks that it's unjust, that we shouldn't be able to do this. So I want you to listen to this and then give me your feedback in just a moment. Take a listen.
Sure.
President Trump has authorized military strikes against suspected drug boats in the Caribbean. As you know, so far more than 20 people, Senator, have been killed in six different strikes. Do you believe that these strikes against these suspected drug boats are legal?
No, they go against all of our tradition. You know, when you kill someone, you should know if you're not in at war, not in a declared war, you really need to know someone's name, at least. You have to accuse them of something. You have to present evidence. So all of these people have been blown up without us knowing their name, without any evidence of a crime. And for decades, if not centuries, when you stop people at sea in international waters or in your own waters, you announce that you're going to board the ship and you're looking for contraband, smuggling, or drugs. This happens every day off of Miami, but we know from Coast Guard statistics that about 25% of the time the Coast Guard boards a ship, there are no drugs. So if our policy now is to blow up every ship we suspect or accuse of drug running, that would be a bizarre world in which 25% of the people might be innocent. The other thing about these speedboats is they're 2,000 miles away from us. If they have drugs, they're probably peddling drugs to one of the islands of Trinidad or Tobago off of Venezuela. The idea that they're coming here is like, it's a huge assumption, and really shouldn't you have to present some proof? It is the difference between war and peace. In war, though, you don't ask people's name. But if they want all-out war where we kill anybody and everybody that is in the country of Venezuela or coming out, that has to have a declaration of war. It's something that is not pretty, very expensive, and I'm not in favor of declaring war on Venezuela, but the Congress should vote. The president shouldn't do this by himself.
All right, we got about 1 minute left. Your response, Senator Rand Paul.
Yeah, as somebody who served in the Marine Corps and went overseas to Afghanistan, I'm sympathetic to the, objections to sort of forever wars and so on and so forth. However, Rand Paul here, I think, is just, he's speaking to sort of like the Libertarian Convention, which, by the way, is right before like the anime convention and the Comic-Con convention. But like, no, President Trump has cited lawful executive branch power authorities in order to be able to do these things. When I'm still in the Marine Corps Reserve, I wrote a paper called Make the Roosevelt Corollary to the Monroe Doctrine Great Again. And the bottom line is, we as the United States have the right to be masters of the Western Hemisphere. We do. And under President Obama and then Biden, they let Central and South America turn to hellholes, which are now being controlled both by the cartels and financially backed by China. We have to be able to exercise what resources we have at our disposal in order to stop them. And so I support what President Trump has been doing here in the Western Hemisphere by launching targeted strikes against known cartel drug, potentially human traffickers as well. And I don't buy into Rand Paul's libertarian sort of notions.
Well, thank you for joining us, Aaron Wright. Thank you for being here, folks. He's running for Texas AG, so make sure you check him out if you live in the great state of Texas, because we need a fighter, someone to carry on Paxton's legacy as he makes his way to the Senate. And this is our guy, so give it a look. Thank you again for joining us. We'll be right back with plenty of more American Journal to dive into.
We'll join our regularly scheduled program after these messages.
I didn't know he was taking our ultramethylene blue, so I said, with all our guests, we asked him to take it, and you just gave me your brief testimony. So I would look, because I mean, this isn't BS. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. takes it. It's good for your cells. If you're on SSRIs, you can't take it. It's very serious. We have the strongest, and it funds this operation. You want to get it at thealexjonesstore.com. Medical grade, USP grade, the best. Ultramethylene blue. So you sort of give me your testimony saying you love it. I said, hold on. I don't want to know. I want you to tell people on air, William. So when did you get it? What was the effect?
So I've been a health nut, people call me, all my life.
Well, you look super young for your age. So.
And so I thank God that I've been healthy. And when I take most supplements, a lot of people say, oh, you'll feel, you know, this big surge. And normally I don't. I just think, okay, I'm doing something right for my body and for my brain. And with Methylene Blue, I do notice that it does seem to give me more mental energy. It helps me I keep a lot of late hours. I'm talking to people over in Europe or over in other continents. And so my biorhythms get all messed up. And so it really helps me with my sleep. And
well, be honest, though, because you're saying your doctors, others told you to do it, just like mine did 6 years ago. I got it, USP, didn't really have the effect. My wife liked it, so she's been on it. We tried different brands. This one, I'm not trying to differentiate, it's just true. It's been way stronger for me. If you do have other brands you took that are as good or better, I want to know, because if there's something better, we'll go with them.
I haven't found anything better.
Now, back to our program.
Edwards tonight at 6, a story you will only see on ABC 15 about a new FBI alert warning law enforcement about a legal loophole in gun sales.
If they have a visa, all they need is their ID, the hunting license, then they could come into a gun shop, they'd fill out the exact same form everyone else would, they'd undergo the exact same background check, but the FBI is worried that people who might become radicalized might use this legal loophole to take advantage of the situation and plot an attack.
Brown people of all stripes, whether you're an Indian American or a Mexican American or whoever you are, go out and get a gun legally. Get a license to carry legally. Because when you have people knocking on your door and taking you away without due process as a citizen, isn't that what the Second Amendment was written for?
Now, Don Lemon from his NGO funders is given talking points. And I told you ahead of the No Kings, Antifa, Black Lives Matter, New World Order, Soros event this Saturday and this weekend that they are turning up the heat absolutely massively.
No Kings, a declaration of independence against the tyranny, against lawlessness in the context that there was no rule of law. It was the rule of king. And I think increasingly people are waking up to the rule of law in this country, increasingly appearing to be the rule of Don.
Now, obviously, you have record levels of Hispanics and blacks voting for Republicans. They're not buying it.
This is what we're talking about.
That is falling apart. We had a housing crisis, a health care crisis, an education crisis, massive income and wealth inequality, a corrupt campaign finance system, and the media says, oh, you're going to run, what are you going to run for? Nobody cares. So run more
towards the nobody cares.
We have so many people here also that were fleeing dictatorships, socialism, etc. Myself, I mean, I came from Cuba when I was 6, fleeing communism, and you had a candidate that was to the left of Bernie Sanders, who was a self-proclaimed socialist. And so a lot of different factors, but a lot of them have to do, you know, the same factors, the economy, what's happening at the border, gas prices, our standing in the world, all of that. You know, Hispanic voters are going to be pretty much aligned with the rest of America.
But that doesn't mean the Democrats aren't trying to implement this. They've launched it. They fired the torpedoes. So they have implemented the Podesta plan. Everything else was a beta test, the summer of love, 2020, all that.
But the No Kings protests are organized also by a group called Indivisible, which is founded by Ezra Levin and Leah Greenberg. They both authored a 23-page Google Doc called Practical Guide for Resisting the Trump Agenda. Some people online have claimed that they're communists. And guess, you'll never guess who donated. And I know they mention him, but $7,600,000 to that group is George Soros.
Are you happy about the ceasefire?
Honestly, I like protesting, so not really.
So why don't you protest for the Christians in Nigeria?
Oh, how much are they paying?
You can find upcoming meetings held by your representatives near you at indivisible.org. Join local resistance groups or organize one yourself. Start with groups related to issues that have motivated you to protest and follow up with organizers after the events to see how you can continue to support the efforts. This helps build solidarity.
And if you're in a black college, you better watch out because they're getting ready to false flag you.
I hope that Trump is serious enough to see this through and follow through, because the next thing that's going to happen, mark my words, an ICE agent is going to get shot and killed. There's going to be an explosion. There's going to be left-wing terrorism.
Well, they're already shooting up their vans and killing the illegals instead of the agents. They're already trying to kill agents.
Yes, and my point is, because you're right, it's happening. They're attacking the vehicles. The sniper shot at them. They're going to succeed. Somewhere out there, there's a left-wing nut job that saw Crooks and Tyler Robinson, and they're planning the next anti-Republican, anti-ICE attack. And then it's going to be on Trump. What are you going to do? Are you going to bring down the effing hammer on Antifa? Are you going to bring down the hammer on the Democrats? But it's going to come down to the men with guns, the men with the guns and the badges. Who are they personally loyal to? What is their interpretation? Who do they believe actually wields the real authority? That's the definition of a constitutional crisis. It's a definition of a political crisis. I don't think people realize the peril we're in, least of all the Democrats who keep pushing.
A month ago, 95% of the pieces were in. Now, there's one piece left, and it's false flags. That's it. And I said they're going to start hyping attacks on traditional black colleges. I said it 6 months ago, and a month ago they evacuated it when Charlie Kirk got killed and claimed his supporters were going to go blow it up. And they evacuated them nationwide. Of course, later they learned it was a false flag.
Hey, Chase, good to talk to you again. I wanted to do a quick plug on the methylene blue, on the long-term effect that it had on me. Back in 2020, I got COVID. My brother and my dad both have eczema. After I got COVID, it must have, it opened that dormant cell in my body or whatever. So I've been dealing with eczema ever since 2020. And the long-term effects of the methylene blue, 99% gone.
That's absolutely incredible. I'm so happy. Have your relatives tried it too to see the same effect?
I have been trying to get my brother to take it, and he's skeptical. But I'll tell you what, I got 4 bottles sitting on my table. I think I'm just going to give him one. And I think if I just give it to him, I think he'll eventually try it.
Yeah, that's a good move.
You're tuned in to the American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
I'm welcoming you back to the American Journal. We're here in the third hour getting ready to kick it off with a bunch of stories the mainstream media probably won't tell you about. And this one in particular caught my eye over the weekend. It has to do with birth control. Now, I get it, gentlemen. You're probably not so hot on this topic. But if you have a daughter, a female that you love, obviously, wife, whatever it is, you want to hear about this because it's deeply, deeply concerning. So many women, especially young women, when they walk into their doctor's office, are pushed upon to take birth control. Now, whether it's the injectables or the actual tablets itself, they always try to push you to take it. It doesn't even matter if you're sexually active. The reality of it is, if, like when I was a teenager, they saw a couple of acne that you might have had on your face and said, oh, if you want to solve your acne issues, take some birth control. And there's a long-term effect that really rarely gets, I guess, any type of public acknowledgement. The long-term effects of birth control could be extremely damaging. Pfizer had an injectable. I remember as a kid, they were pushing this on to me when I was a teenager just for possibly helping me get rid of a couple of pimples. Well, now it looks like, according to at least 1,200 women, that they're claiming that it actually caused brain tumors. Now, there was a report, and I think it's a very interesting report that I want to play for you in clip 15, that details what one of these women is alleging. Take a listen.
Robin Phillip has been through 2 surgeries and months of radiation, all due to a tumor she now believes was caused by her birth control injections.
If I would have knew from the get-go, I would never took that shot.
Depo-Provera is a progestin shot injected every 3 months. 1 in 4 women in the United States use it, with black women taking the shot at nearly double the national rate. Phillip took it for nearly 30 years. Multiple studies have found a potential link between Depo and meningioma, including one that found women who took the drug for more than a year had 5 times the risk of developing the tumor. Phillip is now one of more than 1,000 women suing Pfizer, the maker of Depo-Provera, alleging the company chose to ignore relevant safety concerns and deliberately not study the long-term safety of Depo.
These women all have meningiomas. Many have surgery. Some have radiation. And they've all had their lives greatly impacted.
The European Union added a warning label for meningioma to the drug in 2024. Canada has listed it as an adverse reaction since 2006. No such warning exists in the United States. In a motion seeking dismissal of the case, Pfizer says it became aware of the risks of meningiomas in 2023 and made an application to the FDA to change the drug's warning label. The company says the FDA rejected their effort to warn patients. The FDA declined our request for comment, but in a letter to Pfizer included in the motion, it wrote, "The findings of the available observational studies alone do not support the addition of a warning." Pfizer saying to NBC News it stands behind the safety and efficacy of Depo-Provera.
Now, obviously, this is something that's very, very concerning, and I want to talk about this at length. So joining me to discuss is Dr. James Thorpe. He's a board-certified OBGYN. He has actually been the one, the only one that I know of, when it comes to sounding the alarm on a lot of these vaccines and the dangers that they cause. He's also the author of the book Sacrifice, How the Deadliest Vaccine in History Targeted the Most Vulnerable, and he's with us now. Dr. Thorpe, I want to thank you for being here. It's an honor to have you on the program. I know back in my producer days, we had you on shows. And so it's great to finally have you now that I'm hosting my own show. So thank you for being here. This is a very, very serious issue in regards to the dangers, the long-term dangers of taking birth controls. I remember being a teenager and they didn't even care about whether it was your sexual history to even ask you whether you want to take birth control. It was just a matter of, do you have acne? Well, this could be a nice treatment that you could utilize to get rid of acne. And that was something that was pushed on me. My mom actually stepped in and said, no, she doesn't need it. But they wanted to force this injectable on me. What are you learning about the dangers in all of this? Because I know you were one of the first to sound the alarms on it.
Yes, it's it is a very dangerous form of contraception. This was developed by the, as best of my recollection, I think it was developed by the Upjohn Company in Kalamazoo, Michigan, who was subsequently bought out by Pfizer. And this has a long sordid history. I think the original application was in 67 and was rejected. I think there was another application in the 70s that was rejected from the FDA. And finally, I think in the 80s, it was approved for use. It's a very dangerous drug. It's a 150 milligram shot every 3 months in the buttock, upper buttock or the hip. It's a painful shot. And one of the problems with any type of drug like this is once you inject it, if you have an adverse reaction, you can't remove it. It's there. And by the way, it's detected for anywhere up to 6 to 9 months after the last shot. It was never tested appropriately. And it has a long sordid history of being pushed on minority groups, on Black Americans and African Black girls, for a long time before it was approved. So it's very concerning, but isn't it consistent with Pfizer? Let's not forget in 2009, Pfizer received, for fraud had to pay, $2.4 billion to the Department of Justice for fraud, and then look what they did with the COVID-19 vaccines. So this shouldn't come to any surprise to anybody, right?
Yeah, no, it shouldn't. And I actually want to kind of hover over the fact that Black women were mainly using, Black girls were mainly using this, because I think that really drives home a point that so many pro-lifers have, that there's this hyper-focused effort to go out there and promote Black women to get abortions, and Planned Parenthood obviously targeting them. And then we also see that this was also being heavily used by Black women in this country. Do you see a direct correlation between the two?
I do. African American women and other citizens of in low socioeconomic, densely populated areas, it was pushed on them. They were not given informed consent. And, you know, the meningioma is just one of many complications. I've had patients that have used it and they've never been able to get pregnant again. This is a very potent drug that has the potential for interrupting fertility and ovulation, possibly lifelong.
There are numerous other side effects, psychiatric side effects. You mentioned pushing it for acne. Well, you know, it actually has caused acne in a lot of patients, and it has caused substantial weight gain in a lot of patients, many other chronic diseases. It's not just progesterone. There's a lot of other ingredients in that shot, including ethylene glycol, as I recall, and others that are just not safe.
Yeah, well, that's shocking to hear that, honestly, because I didn't even know that was included in it as well. But there's a problem with birth control as a whole, and I don't think we talk about it enough. You know, I remember when I took the pill in my early 20s for a couple of months, and I immediately started gaining weight, and I didn't realize how bad it was getting. And then I had severe mood swings, and I ended up taking myself off of it and then immediately losing like 30 pounds. I mean, it was that bad for me. But so many women don't know the risk involved with this. It's not just, again, the injectables. It's also the oral pills that people are taking, that women are taking. How severe is it when women are coming into your office and they're asking you questions about this? What are you specifically warning them about?
Yeah, and I want to just make it clear. So I'm OBGYN physician, board certified, but I'm subspecialty, double board certified in high risk obstetrics. So my focus is really high risk pregnancy. But I do have a long experience with a knowledge and with people using this drug and patients coming in on it. So, yeah, I find, you know, I think that you've done a terrific job exposing this. You know, others have too, and credit to them. Candace Owens gets a lot of credit. I don't agree with all of her views, but I respect her tremendously. I think she does a terrific job. She did a great job on exposing the risk, I think, of Depo Provera and also oral contraception. And, you know, so have many others. You know, there's a Substack, by an anonymous, the name of the Substack is Unbecoming is the author, and Depo Provera, the shot heard around the world. There's many others, John Leek and Peter McCullough at the McCullough Institute have done a terrific job on also exposing these risks. Yes, Depo Provera should be taken off the market. And I agree with you in terms of the oral contraceptives, you know, over the last, 60 years. I think there are a lot of side effects on those which have been really hidden and not really talked about and discussed.
Yeah, and I think we need to have these conversations, and we need to start exposing this, because, you know, so many young women are going into their doctor's offices and they're being given to these as if it's the first option and as if it's necessary, and you don't understand the long-term effects of it, especially if you're someone who potentially down the line wants to have children. You need to know these things, and you need to understand how dangerous this could potentially be. And speaking of that, you know, as I've said, I've booked you on other shows before, and you were one of the very few to sound the alarm on the COVID jabs. I remember when women were being censored on social media, when they were just simply trying to say on Instagram after taking the first round of whatever vaccine it was that they took when it came to COVID, that they started having irregular periods and some missed their periods. And then they were quickly censored, and that was removed from all platforms. And their accounts in some cases were also banned. But we're now realizing, as what we kind of figured, that these vaccines were in fact causing issues. I wouldn't even call them vaccines because they failed to provide people with immunity. So we could just say the word jab, I guess, at this point. But It's very upsetting to go over what we now know and to think about how the government, even people like Dr. Anthony Fauci, who pushed these jabs onto pregnant women without disclosing exactly what was going to be put at risk. You know, I was talking to an attorney when I was forced out of Fox News. I was talking to a lawyer, and she didn't agree with me on politics, but said, you know, I actually had a miscarriage, and I 1,000% think it was due to the vaccines, but we can't talk about it. Tell us what now we're kind of learning in regards to the vaccines and what it's doing for women who are either who are pregnant and how it puts them at risk.
Yeah, that's the focus of my book, actually, Sacrifice, how the deadliest vaccine in history targeted the most vulnerable. My co-author, there it is on the screen there, and my co-author, Celia Farber. And this is not only my personal experience, and by the way, You know, I've been practicing high-risk obstetrics for 46 years now. I'm still actively practicing. And during this time period, I don't think there was any other obstetrician or maternal fetal medicine physician in the world that as extensively published as me on the effects of the vaccine in pregnancy, and certainly none that blew the whistle like I have. There's a few other OBGYN doctors. And few others that are in practice are as experienced as I am. So this is coming from my own personal experience. Mm. I saw 27,500 high-risk pregnant women from 2019 to 2023, mid-2023, when I was fired from SSM Health for showing them my publications and for testifying in the United States Senate and being on high profile platforms like yours and Tucker Carlson's. So I was fired. This was a really dark period in our history that was really, it was a fascist, it was controlled state of information like we've never seen in this country before. And this is coming out now. All the media was controlled. All the dissenters were censored. Many, not only myself, many, many other physicians who blew the whistle, and we were all censored. And I hope that this never happens again in the United States of America. The government took control of all the non-governmental organizations, including the medical organizations. All of the medical journals are controlled. All of the major medical centers and the hospitals are controlled by under-the-table contracts. So I saw disasters. You mentioned abnormal menstruation. That's just one. We published the My Cycle story. And you're right. Tiffany Corrado, who started that back in 2021, she had thousands, I think 30 or 40,000 followers on her social media page who had menstrual abnormalities after the vaccine. Totally censored, removed. So she started another platform, and we published off that. And not only are they at risk for severe abnormal menstrual problems and also vaginal bleeding in pre-pubertal and postmenopausal women as well.
Yeah.
But they're also at high risk. You know, those women who didn't take the vaccine, who didn't have COVID, who were menstruating normally when they came in close contact with a vaccinated individual within 6 feet, they too themselves developed severe menstrual abnormalities. And we were the first to publish that I think we all knew as clinicians, this shedding phenomenon. But I think this recent publication really proved that. So it's a double-edged sword. It's a very, very, in pregnancy, it was a disaster, Brianna. And I've published extensively on that. And I'm using government data and using Pfizer's own data. So we saw severe increase in miscarriages, both early and late, malformations, abnormal development of the organs within the embryo and fetus, stillbirth, fetal death after 20 weeks, severe growth restriction. We had severe bleeding. We had multiple problems with the placenta and abnormal placental. For example, fetal growth restriction, lack of amniotic fluid. We had all types of problems with autoimmune diseases in pregnancy. And after the baby was born, a substantial increase in newborn death and premature delivery. Cervical insufficiency, premature rupture of membranes, severe early onset preeclampsia. I could go on and on and on. Our last publication, we published 36 adverse events that by far and away, by a high magnitude, exceeded the safety signal in the government's own data for pregnancy complications. 27 during pregnancy and 10 in the newborns after birth.
So I actually want to ask you about this, too, because you mentioned the data. The VAERS reports are heavily relied on by politicians when they're talking about these vaccines. And they're constantly citing the latest numbers from the VAERS report. But for those who I know personally who were vaccine injured, and it was very, very obvious that they were vaccine injured, for an example, I mean, someone who within a couple hours after getting the first jab experienced multiple seizures, the doctor refused at the hospital to fill it out a VAERS report at all, saying that this was stress-induced, even though this person didn't have a history of that. And then Dr. Naomi Wolf, thankfully, she put out the very detailed reports on what she found through the FISA data that was dumped out there. But she specifically put out the fact that it does cause seizures amongst people and pointed exactly what part of the brain, the lobe, that it does cause these seizures in. So a lot of doctors and hospitals were really afraid of reporting the actual VAERS numbers. Why do you think that fear existed in the first place? Is there some type of retaliation if they were to fill out a report?
Yes. In fact, people have been fired for filling out VAERS reports. This is a really important issue that you bring up. And Naomi did a really good job on the Pfizer papers and on her book. But, you know, I was aware of that long before her book was published, because in 2021, where I did all my Pfizer research was from the post-marketing data that was legally mandated by the FDA to Pfizer. And they provided Pfizer with 10 weeks of post-marketing data. And that was from mid-December 2020 to February 28th, 2021. And so that was made available by a whistleblower to the whole world in 2021. And I received that mid-2021. So I published extensively on that. So, you know, we have, my work was completely independent of Dr. Naomi Wolf. So we're not colluding or collaborating. She did a completely different look than I did. I had a completely separate data source than she had. I never looked at her work, and she never really looked at mine. So, you know, you have two witnesses, you know, myself, Dr. Jim Thorpe, and Dr. Naomi Wolf. And so what they found in Pfizer, you know, this really tells the whole story, Brianna. If you have a post-marketing analysis in 10 weeks that shows 42,086 casualties just from the Pfizer shot, including 1,223 deaths, a huge proportion of those just falling over dead immediately after the shot or within a week of the shot with no other illnesses. This was the most dangerous drug ever released to medicine in the history of medicine. And when our government became aware of that in early 2021, Brianna, what do you think they did with it? They should have pulled the drug off the market in December of 2020. They tried to hide this for 75 years from the American people. And attorney Aaron Seary had to launch several lawsuits in Freedom of Information Act requests to get the data so it wasn't legally available by legally dropping by a court order on April 1st, 2022. That really tells the whole story. And for those of you who are, you know, dissenting or disagree with me, which, by the way, the vast majority of OBGYN doctors, they've all been threatened and bribed. There's 62,000 OBGYN doctors in North America. And ACOG, American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, ABOG, the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology, and the Society for Maternal Fetal Medicine, SMFM, are the three organizations that really control the world. You know, as goes America, so goes the rest of the world. They were all bought off. They were paid under the table with collaborative agreements. And as a result of that, those three organizations, in addition to two other organizations, colluded. And on September 27th, 2021, they threatened 62,000 OBGYN doctors in North America that if you deviate from our protocol, we will destroy your career, we will remove your state licensures, and we will remove your board certifications.
Yeah.
So, of course, all the OBGYN doctors are silent.
It's really scary, and I want to have you back on to talk about how we fix this issue, because I think that's the key point in all of this, but we're running low on time, so I'd love to have you back on the show. Dr. Thorpe, thank you for joining us today. This was very, very insightful, and I'm learning more and more, so thank you.
Thanks for having me on, Brianna.
Folks, I want to remind you all to head on over to the alexjonesstore.com right now, because we have an incredible flash sale going on right now. It's the sea moss gummies. Buy one, get one free while supplies last. Again, folks, it's over at the alexjonesstore.com. When you sign up for auto shipments, you guys get the best price available and guaranteed monthly shipments. So head on over to the alexjonesstore.com right now. More underway. Don't go anywhere.
Harrison, I am so excited to talk to you. I want to plug the Irish Sea Moss was a big game changer for me. I was having a lot of like thermoregulation issues, like morning severe chills and cold in the morning. Hmm. All that stopped with the sea moss because it's a thyroid issue, and the sea moss has that iodine to heal your thyroid.
Isn't that amazing?
The methylene blue. Yeah, the methylene blue, life changing. I love it. I don't need caffeine anymore. Like, it's amazing, but I'm trying to be quick.
It's all right. Hey, when you're plugging, we got all the time in the world.
I love his supplement formula. I am an acupuncturist. I have a master's degree in Chinese medicine, and he's got some really good formulas put together, and they work really well. I really appreciate it. I stopped taking all of my other stuff that I was taking, and I just take a lot of you guys' stuff. I mean, because I love you and I want to support everything you guys are doing, but the formulas are good. I love the greens powder. That I've tried every different type of greens powder out there, and nothing has had as much stuff, amazing stuff packed into it, that has like a decent flavor to it. So the Optimal Human is like a daily staple.
It's
for
good,
me.
Right?
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah. And, okay. And I'm not saying that because just for you guys, but seriously, I've tried so many greens powders over the years, and it really is the best.
And are we paying you, Katie? Did we pay you to call in?
I would love to work for you. I swear, Alex Jones Fisher is on, like, my mantle with all of my family pictures.
That's
like,
amazing.
We love Alex.
Some people call in and go, this person, you're paying them. But, like, no, but our products really are good. People really like them. It's true.
Well, I accredited him to, like, the life-changing experience I had when I decided to leave California because I didn't want to bash Trump. And I listened to Jones when I found him. And I'm like, I got to get the hell out of here.
Right.
And so I moved back home to Ohio. And 3 months later, I met my husband. I feel like that life-changing event for me was because of listening to all the information that he gives. He's not like predicting the future. He's just giving you the information that's hard to find, where they're telling you what they're going to do.
Yeah. Well, now you have a 3-year-old kid. So, your life's going great.
Yes.
I've said it before, but with a lot of these products, like, you really don't know what it's going to do for you, because you might not know that you're lacking a vitamin or lacking a mineral. And it like happens all the time with iodine. Iodine is one of those things where, like, as soon as you start taking it, you're like, oh, I'm not supposed to, and I'm not a doctor, this is not a medical claim, but people experience this. I've heard it from my friends where they're like, I'm not supposed to be tired all the time. I apparently just was lacking iodine. And it's like, you don't know if you're going to feel more energetic, if you're going to sleep better, if you're not going to have chills anymore. It's like people sort of go around thinking that that's the way their body is, but it's like, no, you're missing a key component. You're missing a vitamin, you're missing a mineral, and you don't even realize until you start taking something from the Alex Jones store. So I completely understand that you start taking the Irish Sea Moss and suddenly something that you thought was just the way your body is. No, turns out you can fix it. You can fix these things. Again, I'm not making medical claims, but you can only find out for yourself what effects these things will have. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Thanks for the plug, Katie.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
You're tuned in to The American Journal with your host, Brianna Morello. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back to The American Journal. We're excited to have you all on the program today. We're in our final lap of the show, and we've been digging into all the stories the mainstream media is just never going to tell you about. So this next story is one that you're going to want to listen up on. It's sad, but it needs to be talked about. In Portland, they're dealing with a homeless crisis like many cities throughout this country, and there's very few people documenting it, but there's been one incredible journalist doing just that. And yesterday he posted a video that gained a lot of attention. It was of a man who sadly had fatally overdosed in the streets of Portland. Now, in clip 16, you're going to watch Kevin Dahlgreen give you his report based on the man whose body just appears to be frozen in the streets of Portland. Now, just to tell you guys, we did blur the individual's face out. I requested that just in case his family has not been made aware of his passing. So take a look at this video, and we'll have Kevin on the other side of it.
Behind me is a man's body that's been here for several hours. We've watched hundreds of people walk by and not even notice. We called 911, but still there's no response. So right in front of me is a dead body. Clutching in his left hand is foil. So this was very clearly a fentanyl overdose. What's also really crazy is hundreds of people have walked by the last hour because we're waiting on emergency services and they've yet to show. And so this person has been completely motionless and it's like literally nobody has noticed. This is just another tragic death on the streets of Portland, which in my opinion could have been prevented.
It could have been prevented, and sadly, we're dealing with this issue right now in our country, and very few want to step up to the plate. But Kevin is, and he joins us now, and he does an incredible Substack, folks. I actually just became a paid subscriber to it this morning. It's truthonthestreets.substack.com, and that's what keeps independent journalists independent, so it's very important that you support. Kevin, I want to thank you for being here, because this is a topic, like I said, that very few independent journalists will actually tackle, and it's a very important one. You're on the streets in Portland every day, and you came across this man who we haven't identified yet, and it appears that he had fatally overdosed on fentanyl, but it took hours for first responders to get there. Tell us a little bit about the background on this story.
Well, my you know, my friends who kind of go out and document too, discovered this body and called me and asked me, you know, well, what do we do? This is crazy. And I said, well, step one, call, you know, let's call 911 immediately. I'll be there in 5 minutes, which I was. We checked his pulse. We really just want to make sure he was dead, which he was. Once EMS knew this, he was no longer considered a priority because he had already passed. So in Portland, Oregon, getting a first responder to show up is very difficult because there's so much chaos that happens on the streets there. A dead body is not a priority. So there was other homeless lurking around, and one lady actually walked up to him and started going through his pockets. So we decided, well, we can't just like leave because this guy is going to get robbed because, you know, like his wallet and whatever's in his pocket should go back to his family. So we waited, and it took over 2 hours for emergency services to show up with a coroner to put him into the white bag. So it's frustrating, but this is just the nature. You know, when you're living in a city that's complete crisis mode, that's what happens. And, you know, eventually I just started counting people walking by. And the crazy thing is – of the hundreds of people that walked by, 95% did not even look in his direction. They either are so numb to it, they didn't notice him, or just have now been just trained to ignore everything below them, which is kind of a very typical, sadly, a very typical Portlander that doesn't want to know the truth.
Yeah. Yeah, Kevin, I think like I just recently got to Austin. I didn't realize how bad it was here. But I don't know if I would have even noticed. I would probably thought this was just a homeless person sleeping on the streets. And I don't think I would have hovered over enough to see that he was actually frozen. And, you know, this kind of is an eye-opening experience for me. And just hearing you describe the fact that he's frozen and he's gripping onto the foil, something to keep my eyes open for as an overdose case. But this is really sad. But it's not the first time you've run into this. You know, I was going through your reporting and you've seen this before with teenagers overdosing as well. I mean, I know we have that video as well. But you're one of the very few going out there in these streets and speaking to these homeless people and getting their side of it and how they ended up in this situation. You know, this video, again, it just, my heart just hurts so badly when we're watching this.
That's a rough one. He died. Oh boy. Yeah. So yeah, I see this all the time. Usually I find them not dead, but dying. And mm-hmm. So in some ways that's a good thing because then you can try and save them. And you know, and I fortunately end up saving a high percentage of the individuals I find every day, but I do lose some of them because it's just, you know, we're dealing with the deadliest drug in history. And one thing I've been writing extensively on is how harm reduction in Portland, Oregon, that continue to hand out the tools to use to these individuals who are deep into their addiction, who don't know how to say no. And that's something I've been very critical of. So for example, this kid right here was given foil, straws, and pipes from outreach workers, thinking that they're giving him this beautiful right to use and bodily autonomy, and he dies 15 minutes later. So that's very common on the streets. So it's hard. There's, you know, Portland is not as amazing as people think. There's a lot of problems.
Yeah. Well, Kevin, I mean, this is a post that you made on social media on October 18th. You detail that this is also personal for you, you know, your brother having an issue and you saving your brother. I think so many Americans can relate to this because so many of us know someone that we love dearly is struggling with an addiction issue. They've been swept up into this massive, massive issue, and they get swept up into fentanyl. It's something that you don't even think about. And this is going on. Tell us a little bit about how you saved your brother, because I think this is definitely an uplifting story for those at home who are dealing with the same issue.
Absolutely. So Jason and I are only 11 months apart. Mm-hmm. So we were very close growing up and we're very close now. And he and I grew up in a very challenging household. And long story short is in his early 20s, he started developing this meth habit, which was just shocking to us because we grew up in such a strict household too, to like, don't use drugs and, you know, get a good education. And long story short, it happened. So he ended up on the streets for over a year, nearly died. I was angry at him at the time because he had actually stolen things from me because he was an addict, right? And when someone in the early 20s, stuff means a lot to them, right? So I was pretty angry with him. One day out of the blue, he actually called me and said, Kevin, you know, I'm sorry. I'm desperate. I need help. It was a very defining moment in my life because on that phone call, and again, this was he was a payphone. He was calling a payphone. I was on a landline because this is the 90s. This voice came into my head and said, now's not the time to be angry at your brother. And those emotions washed away immediately. And all I felt was compassion. And all I felt like I have to save him because I was angry. I was angry he had stolen from me. And I'm big enough to admit that's how I was feeling. So anyway, I found him. He was living under a bush. He lost 80 pounds. He looked like just absolutely hell. Moved into my apartment. Long story short is I eventually got him into treatment and recovery. His date of sobriety is the date he moved into my house. He's now been sober for almost 30 years. Mm-hmm. He is thriving, has a nephew, has a house. And he's just killing it. He's become a completely self-sufficient adult. And I use this story a lot to just tell people anybody, I believe, can become self-sufficient from the streets. It takes the right support. It takes the right expectations. rules, whatever it takes, you know, to help these individuals. And that's kind of what inspired me to keep doing this, is going out there and realize that I believe I can save anybody. I believe we can save anybody on the streets. So.
Yeah. And Kevin, I like the fact that you go out there and you check in on these people. You've developed relationships with them. You know who they are. You're very familiar with them. So you are essentially doing the reporting on it, and you're also checking in on them to make sure that they're okay. And it's very important. You know, I'm from New York City, and I've seen homelessness in New York City. And most of the time, honestly, it is people who just reject getting any type of mental health issues. They have mental health issues. They're rejecting any type of medical intervention. And so a lot of them are living on the streets for that. But for the very first time in Austin is where I started seeing women on the streets and how normal it is for women on the streets. And I spoke with you yesterday about this, because when I see them, my stomach just turns, because I know the worst is probably happening to them. And it's very likely that it is. And we had a caller even call in, and I believe, I don't remember what state she was from. I believe it was the Midwest, saying that she deals with a lot of these women who struggle with addiction. And there was one woman who she had a kick out of a building, and she said that she was gang raped in a van that picked her up off the streets. And it's a very serious issue, and you're covering it. So we're going to play clip 17 about how homeless women are raped in Portland. Take a listen.
This severely mentally ill redhead behind me is kind of new to Portland. I see her every single day wandering through traffic. Oh, she's in shoes today. Normally she's barefoot, which is really scary as it's getting colder. A lot of men approach her because she's young and cute, I guess. And I have no idea what's happened to her at night, but I do know she doesn't feel safe, because a lot of times when a male approaches her, she runs away very quickly. So I think horrific things are happening to her every night. This is the brutal reality of the streets of Portland, is people like her are just simply ignored.
And these are like the many of the stories that you do cover over your Substack, to undermine our audience, over at Truth on the Streets Substack. But I want to talk about this, because this is a big issue. She's obviously dealing with mental health issues, and she needs help. I was told there was resources being brought to Portland, and those who are living on the streets would get the assistance that they need, but it doesn't appear to be that way.
It doesn't. And first of all, when it comes to women, it's not if, but when. It will happen. Yeah. It is so common. It's extremely rare to find a female in the streets where it did not happen to them, right? It's almost guaranteed, and that's what's so scary. And we spend hundreds of millions of dollars a year, and I am sorry, I rarely see helpers out there, right? And I sometimes get a lot of hate from these providers, like, well, we're out there. I says, well, where are you? Because I'm out there every day. I have friends who are out there who are volunteers, and we don't see you. And more importantly, even if they say they're out there, I know a high percentage of this population, the homeless population, and they tell me they've never met them or seen them. They don't know who they are, what their names are, where they work, when they walk out. But when I walk down the street, they're like, hey, Kevin, how's it going, right? Because I get to know them, right? And so I'm just saying, if you're out there, step up your game, because we're spending, this is a crazy number, in Portland Metro, $740 million a year on specifically homeless services. That is an obscene amount of money, considering our homeless population. It calculates to about $80,000 per homeless person. This is why I oftentimes call it the homeless industrial complex. It is big money to be in the homeless game, you know, and that's a very, yeah, right there, $724 million. It's very, very obscene how much money is being spent and how little is getting done. I did a study last year where I interviewed as many homeless people as I possibly could in Portland Metro, ended up talking to over half video, you know, and interviewing them. And they said, I have either never been approached by an outreach worker, or it's happened once in 5 years. So my question has to be, well, then where is the money going? Right. Mm-hmm. And so while I understand some homeless people might be lying to me, they're not all lying. Because here's the thing about a homeless person. They have nothing to lose. They're generally not going to lie because they don't care, right? Yeah. That's the thing about a homeless person. That's why in some ways it's wonderfully liberating talking to them, because they're just going to tell you what's actually going on, right? Because they don't care. So anyway, that's just the reality of the streets.
Yeah. And you know, this just reminded me when I was first starting off in news, I was covering New York City, for an example, and the Thrive NYC program was run by Bill de Blasio's wife at the time. And they shuffled over $1.5 billion, I believe it was. And there was nothing. Well, you know, they brought them in front of the city council and asked for the receipts. They couldn't show you and point to where that money went. It just happened to vanish. And as we were digging through it, there were just millions and millions of dollars that vanished, and the number just completely skyrocketed. And I know California is having that same issue too, and it would be incredible for this DOJ to do the digging into all of this, because I have a bad feeling that some bad people got their hands onto the money and it's not going to where it was supposed to go. I could speak towards New York City. I don't know what the Portland politics and all of this are, but in New York City, when we were following the money and I was covering what was going on in the city council hearings, they couldn't prove where all the money was going, and that in itself was really, really gut-wrenching. And it looks like they got away with it because nobody was ever held accountable. And they were able to say, we don't have the receipts to prove where the money went. So, yeah, that's something that should be followed by our DOJ. I hope that they do that. I also wanted to ask you, Kevin, because this one also tore at my heart. Obviously, as a female, I could never imagine having to go through this. But in clip 18, you know, you're talking to a woman who's telling you what it was like to give birth inside one of these homeless tents that are on the streets. She's detailing what happened to her when she was on the streets of Portland and she started going into labor. Take a listen.
I ended up having them in the tent because I couldn't hold them in anymore. It was hurting pretty bad, so I was like, come on, like, I can't. I got to have him now. So ended up having my friend Jackie help me, and she was pretty cool and nice about that when she helped me with the baby. She made sure that she caught him when he came out. So, yeah.
I'm sure you didn't.
She wiped him off, and it was pretty nice to have somebody there for that.
I'm sure you didn't expect to give birth in a tent.
No, but I'm glad it was in a clean tent and big tent, because something small like that, that would have been probably.
It's so devastating to hear her detail that. What's the backstory on her story? Because obviously we don't want to see women on the streets, but to be pregnant on the streets is just awful.
So this was her third child. Her second was stillborn. The very last second of the clip, you saw her head under a jacket. Mm-hmm. That's because it was just after we interviewed her. It says, well, where's the child? She says, well, I gave her to my family. And then she walked away. We followed her and she went under that jacket and started smoking fentanyl. So even though she had just given birth and we're hoping to God, maybe she would want to work on getting clean and being a mom, she still is choosing drugs over her children. So that is her smoking fentanyl right after basically the given birth, which is really sad. It shows, you know, a couple things. It just shows how powerful addiction is and what she's willing to choose over something so beautiful, you know. And so it's just really tragic. And, you know, women giving birth on the streets is actually very common, where in some ways she's lucky in this case because the child, I believe, was relatively healthy under the circumstances, but a lot of babies will die out there too. And I do find very young children and infants on the streets almost every day. I wouldn't say every day. It just, you know, it's a little bit more of a rare thing, but you do find them. And that's just really tragic.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't even imagine what those kids have to endure, especially all the predators that are probably going after them. And I also wanted to get your take on this because I saw your video covering specifically the homeless people in Portland who are missing legs. I believe there was one gentleman who wheeled by you in a wheelchair and you said that he actually had all of his legs, just the last time you saw him, and now he was missing, I think, just one of his legs. What is it like for people in Portland, and why is it that they're having to get their legs amputated?
It's shockingly common. Like, I have known so many homeless people who have lost their legs and arms. The two most common reasons is either frostbite or xylazine, which has been added to fentanyl, which is a horse tranquilizer, which leads to this sort of melting of the skin, which leads to amputation. And I would say I know about 10 homeless people right now in the streets of Portland who had legs 1 or 2 years ago. So it's a very, very common thing. One homeless woman I interviewed last year said she had to wait until she lost a leg before the social service system would help her, because then they deemed her high risk. So she was begging them with both legs, please, can you help me? And they were like, not interested. They're like, well, no, we're not interested in helping you. But once she lost a leg, they're more than happy to get her into a tiny home. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes the homeless in Portland will joke that, you know, we have to, you know, getting off the streets costs an arm and a leg. Just a horrible joke. Yeah. This is what the homeless say. It's hard not to laugh, sort of, because they say this all the time because it's kind of true. It costs an arm and a leg to get off the streets of Portland. And, you know, so obviously I have a good attitude about it, but it's also like, that's so obscene. And it's true. So because, you know, it takes a certain type of high level of acuity and vulnerability before you're actually helped. The problem is a lot of these individuals already have major, major issues, mental health, addiction, medical issues, or just got into a tight spot. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Kevin, yeah, I mean, I wanted to ask you too before you go, cause I know this isn't your beat these days, but it has a lot to do with the drug war here in this country. And you're, you know, seeing what the repercussions of all of this are. But, you know, President Trump has been out there and he's been going out and attacking the Venezuelan drug boats as they're trying to make their way, according to him, to the U.S. A lot of people aren't fans of this because, well, they're not 100% certain that the drugs are on the boat. President Trump says that they are. In fact, that a submarine that they did go after over the weekend, did in fact have fentanyl. It was loaded with fentanyl on it, and it was going to the United States. The two individuals on that submarine have been turned over to their countries of origin and they are facing prosecution. But what's your take on this? Because it's controversial, but it's the president's way of trying to stop these drugs from coming into our communities.
Well, I support that. I mean, it's, you know, again, fentanyl is the deadliest drug in history by far. And it is coming into the country more than ever before. Although I will say in the last year, what I've seen is a significant spike in cost of drugs because the borders have been closed. When, you know, say Biden was president, fentanyl was the cheapest we had ever seen it, which is really scary, right? And soon after Trump was elected, I noticed that the price of fentanyl about tripled, which means it's becoming scarce, which is a good thing. And so it's more expensive, which means less people are using it, which means over time, you know, I think this is going to end up saving lives. So I believe Donald Trump when he believes this is what it is, because it's a very common thing. We're not manufacturing the drugs in the United States. It is coming from other countries. Okay. It is coming over our borders. We do know this. So why not just make our borders stronger to prevent this? And it's going to end up saving, you know, thousands upon thousands of lives.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Kevin, it's great to have your perspective on that because you're someone who's dealing with this issue front and center and helping these people just by covering their stories and keeping up to date with what's going on. I mean, that is really important for them, especially. Again, to our audience, I want to remind you all at home right now that he runs the Truth on the Streets Substack. So it's Truth on the Streets. .substack.com. I did it this morning. I went over there and became a paid subscriber. That's how you are able to get all of your funding. And as an independent journalist, I know that very well and how much you rely on that. So head on over there and subscribe and support his great work because you are really changing what's going on in Portland by just covering it and exposing it because they don't want this to come out. They don't want this to come out. But when you sit there and you're covering these stories, especially the story that you covered this weekend, it forces the national media to cover it. And it also forces these politicians to answer. So, Kevin, thank you for all that you do. I know it's not an easy job, but we really are grateful for it. So thank you.
Thank you. More than happy to be on. I'll do it anytime. Thank you so much.
We look forward to having you back on. And I look forward to all the updates on your Substack page. So thank you. All right.
Thank you.
Audience, obviously we appreciate everything that Kevin does. That was an incredible story that he brought to us. And the stories of those who are living on the streets in Portland, you rarely get to hear what these people are dealing with. So it's good to hear just that. I want to remind our audience as well that right now we have an incredible sale going on right now over at thealexjonesstore.com and it supports us and helps us stay on the air. So head on over there right now because the new flash sale on the Sea Moss gummies, buy one, get one free while supplies last. That's going on right now over at thealexjonesstore.com. When you head on over there and you also become you sign up for the auto ship. You were going to get those monthly shipments sent straight to your door. So you have all of your favorite supplements. You never run out of stock. It is very important to do just that, folks. So there's nothing worse than when you run out of your sea moss gummies and you don't have any left. So plan ahead. Auto ship is the way to go. Also, make sure you head on over right now to alexjonesapp.com and download the app. It is how you stay in touch with us. We're obviously head first in this information war. We never know. We're going to switch things over. So that is the best way to stay in touch with us. All right, guys. I am all done here. Of course, I'll see you here tomorrow morning. The Alex Jones Show starts next.
Feel the unstoppable power of Alex Jones, fueled by Ultimate Creatine Powder. This is the secret weapon behind his relentless energy. Creatine monohydrate ignites his muscles, blasting through lefts and sprints with raw warrior strength, building the physique of a true patriot. With micronized mixability, Alex dominates every day, recovering like a titan to crush fatigue and soar to new heights of performance. His mind becomes a fortress, sharper focus, unbreakable memory, powered by creatine to outlast any mental battle. This nootropic powerhouse defends against fatigue, keeping Alex Jones razor sharp for the fight. Join him and unleash your inner strength. Grab Ultimate Creatine Powder now at thealexjonesstore.com. Fuel your fight and rise with Alex Jones today.
That's pure gold. I'd have in between, like, maybe the creatine zooming in a little. It's coming towards you. But also, it's just 30 seconds left. You'd have me go, baka chaka woom bok, quack, quack, kong, whatever it is. You know, that little, like, ooga chaka munga bok, woom kong kong. That'd be really good.